gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. I had to ask them to make them apply. They wanted to let you off the hook, and I said, no, they don't deserve it. I'd also like to say a big thank you to HelloFresh for supporting the Dana Gould Hour. HelloFresh.com. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code DGH30. Food services and mattresses. Eating and sleeping. The two things I'm good at. And welcome to you to another episode of the Dana Gould Hour, recorded high atop the San Fernando Valley on the Mulholland Drive view shelf and a little place we like to call Falcon's Lair Studios. We are nearing that time of year. Halloween season is almost upon us, so we will be in accelerated production for our Halloween episode, which will be in your inbox prior to Halloween with enough time for you to enjoy it. I'm hoping to get it out by October 15th, and believe me, we have a ton of amazing guests, and they have to be amazing because the guests on this show, this is a murderer's row. You don't deserve a show this good. Valerie Tosse held over last month to make room for big dead Jerry Lewis. Valerie is an incredibly funny comedian and an LA transplant from Boston. So yeah, we had more than a little to talk about. By popular demand, the Bitter Buddha is back. Edward Pepitone is here. Enough said. And lastly, a gentleman I have wanted to have on the show from episode one. Really funny comedian, really skilled writer, really talented actor. One of those guys who, when it comes to comedy at least, in LA in the past 20 years, he seems to know quite literally everyone and seems to have been quite literally every place. And he is also the only person I know who has played himself on The X-Files, Mr. Wayne Fetterman. But before we get to it, Wayne and Valerie and Eddie, let's do a little business. On October 5th, I will be in New York City, where I will be joining John McGinley and Janet Varney at the Javits Center at New York Comic Con for the Stand Against Evil panel. Later on October 5th, I will be at Symphony Space, joining Michael Ian Black and the rest of the crew for Uptown Showdown. The very next day, which is, well, if October 5th, the next day would be, you figure it out. Plan 9 from Outer Space live at the Littlefield Theater in Brooklyn with myself. Listen to this cast. Myself, Gilbert Gottfried, Janet Varney, John Hodgman, Michael Ian Black, Gene Gray, Scott Adsit, Adam Savage, Ron Lynch, Mike Cagliardi, and Ennis Esmer. All on one stage doing a live stage reading of Plan 9 from Outer Space, written by America's favorite transvestite filmmaker, Ed Wood, prior to Tyler Perry. October 6th, we'll also be seeing the release of my new album, if that's what they're called. The release of my new download sounds like something that would happen in a nursing home. Mr. Funny Man on Kill Rock Stars Records, cassettes, and 8-track tapes. October 12th, 13th, and 14th, I'm a-going to Minneapolis, Minnesota at the Acme Comedy Club, one of my favorite clubs and one of my favorite cities. October 26th, back in New York for the television critics shindig. October 29th, back in L.A., Plan 9 from Outer Space live at Largo. We're going coast to coast. Listen to this cast. Me, Janet Varney, Jonah Ray, Paul F. Tompkins, Lorraine Newman, Matt Bronger, Brian Posehn, Deborah Baker Jr. and Nate Mooney and G. Charles Wright, all from Stand Against Evil. October 31st, Halloween, you know what I'm going to be doing. Chilling with my bros. Talking about the sports game and all the accumulated points. No, I'm going to be trick-or-treating with my kids. But on November 1st, Season 2 of Stand Against Evil premieres on IFC. You can catch up now on Hulu as Season 1 is available and streaming. That's my month, folks. I'm streaming and I'm releasing my download. For details and links to all of this baloney, please visit danagould.com, an internet website. And now, it's on to our filthy business.
Dana Gould Hour. Free. And worth it.
It's showtime.
It's a brisk, I wouldn't say brisk. It's not too hot today, though. It's a beautiful, warm, sunny, but not too muggy and hot, late summer day. High atop the Mulholland View Shelf here in beautiful Southern California. We're at Falcon's Lair Recording Studios, and I'm joined by a very funny, talented young comedian or comedian.
Don't you dare.
Which I believe they say. Is that still politically, is it politically no. incorrect?
Yes.
To say comedian?
Very much so.
Funny man.
Sure.
I can't say that. Girl funny man.
Yeah.
Female funny man.
Mm-hmm.
Ladyman.
Yep.
Ladyman.
Ladyman.
Ty Ladyman. Valerie Tosse is here.
Hi. How are we doing?
Hi. Nice to see you. Valerie hosts a monthly show at the Improv here in Los Angeles entitled The Mermaid Comedy Hour.
It's true.
And you've got some other stuff coming up, but it's pending, so you want to withhold it?
Yeah. I'm running around doing a bunch of stuff.
You're going places.
Yeah, I'm doing things.
You're meeting people and eating things.
Yeah. I'm always eating things.
You're meeting people, eating things. You're nice to the nice and you want to be liked.
Oh, see, you should write my bio.
We were talking and you said something and I thought, I want to talk to this person. You're in Newbury, Massachusetts.
Well, I'm not currently in.
No, but you were. And you were a 911 operator?
I was. Yeah, I worked for the Newbury PD. I was a 911 dispatcher and police dispatcher.
Now... The first question that comes to mind, craziest call you ever got, but two, is that a stressful job or is it because you're talking to people that are pouring their worst moment into your ear?
Mm-hmm. It would depend. If I was a dispatcher out here, it would definitely be super stressful because it's a big city and there's always murders and things happening here.
Right.
But back in Newbury, it was pretty quiet for the most part, but we would deal with really weird stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like
there's a raccoon in my credenza.
We had this one woman who would come and she would always show up in the middle of the night and it would be pouring rain. She would ride her bike there. She would literally just fly into the lobby and talk about how the people were in her walls.
Paul Marco, who played Kelton the Cop in Plan 9 from Outer Space and Bride of the Monster, if I'm not mistaken, one of Ed Wood's coterie of actors, towards the end of his life was complaining that there were, quote, dog people living in his walls, which is just gorgeous.
There
are dog people in my walls. There are dog people in my walls. I hope there are. I would be like, I hope so.
Yeah.
I want that to be true for you.
Present them to me.
Yeah. I want to paint that. I want to paint a nice home with dog people but they're not chewing through the walls. They can kind of go in and out of the walls.
Like there's dog
dimensional
doors.
Rift, like a dimensional rift. Yeah. Like they can be that's what I want for Paul and for you. So, but this woman wouldn't call 911.
No, she would just show up.
Right. So you worked out of the police station?
I did. Yeah. We were in the basement of Town Hall. If you can imagine just.
I can.
What a situation we were in.
We grew up in very similar places.
Yeah.
And geographically close.
Where were you again? I forget where you grew up.
I'm from a small town called Hopedale.
Okay.
Which is near Milford, Natick, Hopkinton, Worcester, okay. That area.
Yep.
Down there in the hairy, if Massachusetts has an armpit.
Oh man.
We were the part where there was a bunch of deodorant clumped into the hair.
Oh God.
That's
what
where we were.
What a visual. oh my God. Oh yeah. It's Newbury is a nice town. It's on the coast. So we also dealt with the Coast Guard and stuff.
Hence Newburyport.
Newburyport. And yeah, it was the best part about where I worked was that it was also the same town that my high school was in. So I got to see a lot of familiar faces come through those doors.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
In bracelets?
In bracelets, just...
Guests of the state?
Oh, man. It's just... One of the weirdest things, too, is there was only a couple of women that worked for the department, and you'd have to do sometimes what was called matron duty. If you ever had a female locked up, there always had to be a woman on duty at all times.
Right.
And so there were plenty of times where I would have to come in the middle of the night and just sit in a chair and just hang out while this woman was locked up, or I'd have to pat people down.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And it was, there was the worst of people.
There was a thing in the newspaper yesterday about a woman suing, civil suit, pulled over. They smelled marijuana in her car, which gave them the right to search the car. They didn't find any marijuana in the car. So the police decided to search the inside of her body.
Oh, a natural progression.
On the stop.
Oh my God.
Two male officers. And I'm going to give you a little quiz.
Oh, sure.
You have two guesses as to what state it was.
Ooh, what state? It's got to be somewhere in the South, is it?
There's only two states it could be.
Okay. Arkansas.
Oh, no.
You don't feel like...
I would think Florida or Texas, and it was Texas.
Oh, okay. I would lump that whole... I think Arkansas I could have been in. There's a lot of weird stuff that happens in Arkansas. Florida, you're right. That should have been the obvious guess.
Yeah.
Florida. Oh, God.
It's our sluttiest state. Just in terms of its personality.
It makes sense that that's Trump's favorite vacation destination. Like
It does.
Like, it just, of course.
It's perfect, yeah.
Of course it is. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What a garbage pit.
Yeah.
If you're the clump of gross stuff stuck in, I mean, what are they?
He is. It's the country's shower cookie.
Yeah. Oh my God, gross. Oh, I'm so glad I ate that salad before we started.
Yeah, see, I feed you first.
I appreciate
and
that.
And then I try to bring it up. So people coming in complaining about the people in your walls.
Oh my God.
And you get to kind of usher them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always those small towns, the local weirdos in the small towns.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cornucopia of them. And we had Francis, who was the old guy that walked around, had no teeth, and would go up behind the ski toe.
Oh my God.
And pick blueberries and eat blueberries. And then he would just be this gaping maw, smeared blue, walking around town.
Ugh.
And then Harry Miller, who was the mentally handicapped gentleman who mowed lawns at the cemetery.
Oh my God.
And which is cruel, because you can't get up a good clip mowing lawns at the cemetery, because there's rocks every 7 or 8 feet. They're these giant marble things that you've got to... So you can't really get up a good run.
Oh, God. Yeah, townies. Like, that's one of my favorite things about going home, is just like visiting all the quote-unquote hot spots of where you're from, because it is just... Oh, what a delight.
Yeah, inevitably you overhear, how long you been on the force?
Oh, God. You hear that, or like, because my mom, God bless her, she's the best, but she loves telling people, because she's proud of me, so she loves telling complete strangers that I live in California and that I am an actor and whatever. So we'll be somewhere and it'll just be like, yeah, my daughter, she's here visiting from Hollywood. And it's just like, I want to throw myself in a river. And then people are just asking so many questions, and you're like, well, what have you done? Where can I? Oh, God. Yeah. Like, it's
the one that I get a lot. You're in show business. Is Tom Cruise queer?
I know. Oh, my God.
And then if you go, I don't know, maybe. You're just jealous. How did I become the asshole?
Where did you get that from? Like, why am I? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I actually, we were laughing because today I was so curious, and I was like, I have to know. And I texted my mom and I said, Mom, if you came out to LA and you were going to walk around on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, what star would you have to see? Mm-hmm. And of course, because she's my mother, she's like, yours, of course. I'm like, Mom, that's
sweet.
Gross. That's not what you've got to give me. And like, who would it be? And I thought about it. And my first guess was Tom Selleck, because I feel like that mm-hmm. would be somebody. But of course, I didn't go for the obvious answer. And she literally goes, oh, Mackie Max. I'm like, oh, my God. I was like, oh, God.
Oh, why? Yeah. She's very much it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She goes, second place would be Ben and Matt. You know, we got to root for the Boston boys. I'm like,
exactly.
Oh, my God.
I was on WAAF, which probably isn't even there anymore. It was the rock and roll station out of Worcester, Mass. And I was plugging a gig at the Comedy Connection in Boston. This is, you know, probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And we get a call from, you know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. I drove in. I'm tired. We get a call from Hopedale, Massachusetts.
Oh, no.
I wake up and turn on my radio, and who do I hear but Dana Gould? Hello?
No.
Dana, it's Mrs. Pedroli, Michael's mother. Oh, hi, Mrs. P. How are you? Very good. How are you, dear?
Are you busy?
and then just like we're not on the radio. Like, oh, I see your brother jogging every day up by the Cumberland Farms.
Oh, my God. Cumberland Farms?
We're on the radio, Mrs. P. Say hi to your son.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
It's a very specific. There was a guy on the radio yesterday talking about there's going to be some, you know, of course now some neo-Nazi rally in Massachusetts. We've been tracking these people for a long time. They get all their permits.
Oh my God. Yeah, there's nothing Massachusetts love more than making sure everybody has their permits. Oh God.
What's interesting is today appears to be an actual autumnal day. Here in the, what we call the Mulholland Drive view shelf, high atop the San Fernando Valley in beautiful Southern California. We're at Falcons Lair Recording Studios, and I am joined by the dappled-eyed, smooth-skinned ingenue that is taking this town by storm, a startling young actress who's teaching America how to love again, teaching America how to spank it. Please welcome Eddie Pepitone.
Good evening, everybody. Hello. It is great to be up here on the Mulholland Shelf.
It's great here to be above water level.
Absolutely.
Which is...
How far above sea level are we? Because after the two hurricanes we just witnessed...
I think I'm about a half mile above sea level, and now I think we're about 6 feet.
We're above what?
I think this is about a quarter mile. Okay. Above sea level, and now I think we're at about 6 feet.
Yeah.
And who would have thought that the Kevin Costner epic Water World would have been the most prescient film of the 90s?
Costner right now is peacocking about town because of the prescience, whatever that word is, it's French, of Water World. And everybody now is drinking their own urine just to, you know, get a prime.
Many not voluntarily.
Well, yeah. Being held at gunpoint and having to drink your own urine is a occupational hazard here in Hollywood.
Remember when the Trump tape came out about the Russian prostitutes peeing on his bed and him watching?
That never happened, though, right?
Sure. I don't know. But I like that he immediately went, I'm a germophobic. That would have never happened.
It's like, did he?
That sounded really, really ready to go. It sounded like you had an excuse to be ready to go. But here's the thing. Urine is sterile.
Is that right?
Yeah, urine sterile.
Thank God, because
it is the way I do it.
I've been using it in pancakes with trepidation, which I'm vegan, so we use everything of our own.
All you need is some pancake batter, a cup of your own urine, and a love of adventure.
I'm Lloyd Bridges. Welcome to Pancakes and Urine. Lloyd Bridges at the end of his career really went downhill.
But those are those people that we used to laugh at them because they were survivalists. Like, ha, 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 those jerks. Well, there was Art Bell. Did you ever listen to Art Bell?
Yes. He was a big flying saucer guy. Just a conspiracy lunatic.
Yeah, it's Art Bell was like the X-Files on the radio. There's a lot of UFOs, a lot of thing called shadow people.
And shadow. By the way, do you know what these guys are like, where they come from? What happens is that they get extremely lazy about reading and facts and knowledge, and it's so much easier to make stuff up because that means you don't have to know science.
Right, yeah.
You don't have to know anything about natural history. You don't have to know anything about biology. It's just like, you know what? I'm tired. of having to think.
Yeah, well, if you just say it.
I want to just feel.
If you just say it with enough declarative verve, well, people will buy it.
Well, I mean, we know that. That's stand-up comedy in a nutshell.
It's stand-up comedy, and it's the president of the United States, and it's Criswell. It's just like, you know, by 1972, people will be living on Mars. I happen to know the president is made of sticks.
You know what's scary is when people in power do that, and not even the president, but like a doctor who says to you, "You have a growth on your back," and you know you don't. But he's a sadist.
It's a Friday, and he wants to go out on the week. He wants to go out with a bang. But Art Bell was this guy, and the brilliance of Art Bell. It was called Coast to Coast.
Yes,
I think it's still on with a different host.
Out of New York, was it?
Well, no, he broadcasts out of Pahrump, Nevada.
Oh,
like out in the desert.
The desert people, right? They get a little isolated out there.
And one night I remember I used to have a shower radio and I was working on the Simpsons.
By the way, when you just said the term shower radio, I felt a little fluttering in my pants.
Yeah, well, everybody, when I say that, you have to see me in the shower in your mind. With one word, silken. But that would be a thing you'd never want in the doctor's office. Like you're going into your your oncologist. He's like, "How are you? I'm Dr. Niederman, but please, all my friends call me Silky." Now, Adam, I'm looking at your chart. So Art Bell, he would just not negate anything. And one night I came home. I was working on the show. I came home late, got in the shower. I remember this really clearly.
Go ahead, say it slower.
Turned on the shower, totally nude, buck naked, as naked as the day I was born, covered in blood and screaming, like I was the day I was born, surrounded by people who didn't love me but wanted to get me squared away and quiet.
We qualify for assistance with this one. This
will get us on to WIC. I turn on the radio to Art Bell, and this is what I hear. Mm-hmm. "Sir, I'm not saying that you're not the Antichrist, but I had the Antichrist hotline earlier this week open, and I had 14 calls." And you get people that would call up and go, "I am a time traveler from the Andromeda Galaxy. I currently work at a Walgreens in Louisiana." "Go ahead, sir." I just, no negating whatsoever. And Phil Hendry, the great Phil Hendry,
yes,
had a wonderful parody of Art Bell, a character called General Johnson Jameson. And one of General Johnson's, because Art Bell, all of his advertising was geared to that audience. It was like gold, buy gold. There's a lot of that, precious metals.
Is he comparable to Alex Jones, or is Alex Jones
I was getting there. Jones is the first de-evolution of that. And because Art Bell, it's fun. It's all about devil and ghosts,
but
and
Jones
invisible
makes
people.
It, he attacks people, saucers. Political.
Yeah, and then Jones really does apply it to real life, politics, real people, and really kicking what Kevin Rooney would call the shallow end of our gene pool.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That's where it gets dangerous. These people, and it is the de-evolution of that, you know, in the way that, you know, if you can trace the Ramones to Gigi Allen, Art Bell is the Ramones and Alex Jones is Gigi Allen. It's like, I get the whole
thing. I don't know Gigi Allen.
Gigi Allen was a quote musician, punk rock guy that was, you know, into his own poo. And
Whereas Art Bell,
it was like, I can do anything, so I'm going to. Those are two very separate thoughts.
Yeah, when did music had a bad stage when people were just eating poo on stage and instead of learning how to play.
Yeah.
And it's the same
thing. You're talking about Mozart. Beethoven, one of our great coprophagous composers. But yeah, then you devolve down to Alex Jones. Phil Hendry had this character named General Johnson Jameson that used to make fun of Art Bell's advertising because it was all like canned foods, MREs, bomb shelters, all these things as Mike Murphy would say, people waiting for the event.
Yes.
The event is coming.
Right. But what we know after the recent climate breakdown that's happening, it's not the event, but it's
many little events.
Many events.
Death with a thousand cuts, baby.
Death with a thousand cuts.
Yeah. Well, that was the funny thing that Phil Hendry had, and I might just play it if I could find the clip. It's just General Johnson Jameson selling the human waste chili maker. Simply defecate into the funneled container. And 2 hours later, you have delicious chili. seasoned to taste. It's just amazing. There are certain things.
How about survivalist restaurants? Like, you know, you're just, instead of doing it alone, you know, some survivalists get together and open a roadside.
That's fantastic. Diner, a survivalist and, yeah, restaurant. Come on in.
Marv, can you shit in the chili today? You bet I can.
No, we're all set. It's like a hobo stew. It's like, come on in. Yeah, all the waiters have gas masks and hazmat suits.
Yes, yes.
And while you are eating, you have to fight off. They give you like a pool skimmer pole that you use to fight off giant ants, like ants the size of lions that you have to poke and poke them right between the eyes.
And they're mechanical ants that are sent by the military. Like, it's artificial intelligence. Like, you're dealing with all kinds of shit.
Just to test
God
how we're
damn artificial intelligent mechanical ants. Who's shitting in the chili? Is it Marv again? The survivalist diner located conveniently where the bridges are crushed together.
DEFCON. Yelp says DEFCON delicious. That's fantastic. A survivalist restaurant. We totally have to do that.
Yes.
Just, whoosh, you walk in, it's just sanded. And the maitre d' greets you by popping up from behind the podium with a shotgun. Who are you? Are you with the Citadel? No. I'm just here for lunch. All right. How many? Three. Mm-hmm. This way.
You have anything with the view of the crushed bridges?
Right over here.
Right over here.
The food comes and you have to fight your waiter for it.
Yeah.
Could we have water? Who are you going to give us?
Instead of tipping the waiter, you always just wind up slitting his throat and leaving. And he bleeds. He bleeds out. But as he's bleeding out, he manages to mutter, come again.
Yeah, they were fair.
They were fair.
It is, dare I say it, an exquisite day high atop the Mulholland Corridor, where we just had a nice view of the Burbank fires, by the way. A delightful view of the Burbank fires. It's a strange thing to say about September, but it's unseasonably cool. Normally this time of year, we're in the low hundreds, as summer tends to go out with a six-week fuck you here in Southern California. But today's lovely, and I'm joined by a dear friend, an old friend, who I would like to think of as the Oscar Levant of the Los Angeles comedy scene, only not crazy. But everybody who is crazy loves him. He's the only guest I've had on this show to play himself on The X-Files. Please welcome Funny Lady Wayne Fetterman.
Okay, this is the sound of my voice. Thank you for that intro. It's interesting you should bring that up. We haven't spoken about it. Just read not a new biography, but a biography of Oscar Levant.
Which one?
It's called
Talent for Genius?
Yes.
I have it right on that show.
Yes, A Talent for Genius.
Yeah, he was quite brilliant and a truly tragic dude.
Right, because he was obviously
medicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go through history and you think, if these people just, how much of human history would be different if people just got meds back
right
then?
Right.
But would we not be humanity as we know it?
I know. That's the big question. Isn't that the big question?
You know, the ultimate being Hitler.
Right.
If Hitler had either passed his art class or just
that, you know, Jewish teacher didn't.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, whatever it was. Just like if you just chilled him out a little bit, but does that lead to the kids in the hall film Brain Candy, Wayne?
I don't know. I guess the question is,
because I take meds. You
of course,
don't.
I do not.
I brag about it.
Right. I don't brag about the fact I don't take it, but I do feel slightly.
But I do randomly see you in various places chopping down trees that you don't own.
It's not true. That is not true. What he's saying is not true. I don't want you to believe what he just said.
But that's the Mr. T story. Mr. T bought a big house in like Maryland or someplace.
Uh-huh.
And to exercise, you would chop down trees.
Right.
That was his exercise. And, you know, like the people who lived on Easter Island, one day chopped down the last tree and then turned around and was like, oh, shit. That was it.
Yeah, no, I did. As a kid, as a Cub Scout, excuse me, Weebelo.
Did that leave? Do we still have Weebelos?
I don't know.
That's a dicey name now.
Of course, with a young boy to say that.
Now that that's popular.
Or now that we're just talking about it more, apparently, right?
Barry Crimmins had the greatest joke about, it was an observation, not a joke, right? About Joe Paterno.
Yeah, yeah.
How they...
Penn State coach.
Kept the stadium up, but tore down his statue. He said they should have torn down the stadium and left up the statue.
Right. You know what the name of that stadium is, by the way? You don't. I'll tell you.
I don't.
Beaver Stadium.
You know, the name of Jerry Sandusky's book before all this.
Right. What?
You know it.
I don't.
Touched.
Oh, really?
Now, these people, they hide in plain sight. Yeah, you can't. It's like there's something's there.
Right,
something's
exactly.
There tapping on your shoulder.
Right. I'm sure it's like Jack Nicholson at Gmail. Like, I'm sure. I'm sure that's how he's doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, this isn't where I wanted to go on this, but you opened up the thing and, do you ever think, I should get on some kind of med? Like, what's your crazy? We know my crazy.
Right. I'm really lucky. I'm just really lucky in that regard because I don't really. Again,
you're untouched by anything.
No.
Tragedy, joy. You're just zen about it.
I try to
people die in front of you, and it's nothing. Just like, it's a day at the park.
It's all like, you know, like impressionist.
You're actually,
do you know impressionist painters? Yeah. Monet, Manet, those guys. It's all kind of blurry.
It would be so funny that you talk about how you don't take any medication and you're so fortunate. And then as you talk, we realize that you are a textbook sociopath. Nothing affects me at all. I saw 9/11. I thought, I'm not there. So it didn't affect me.
I have to say, I was very emotional.
President of the United States.
I was very emotional as a kid.
Uh-huh.
To the point was, I felt like it was a little bit of like a crybaby.
I was.
Oh, you were?
Okay. I cried up until like the fourth grade.
I was even a little past that. And then at one point, it was just like...
You know why I did it? Chicks love it.
They love sensitive.
Especially...
Third graders.
Yeah, especially prepubescent girls in the Massachusetts in the 70s.
So, and then at one point, I kind of shut that down.
Uh-huh.
Just like, sure. I can't... Like, people would see me and it was like, are you about to cry? And they would know it. It would be on my face. You know, I guess my face would get red or something.
Yeah.
No.
So I'm fine. So I shut that down. So I do feel like there is a part of me that's emotionally like shut down, which is weird to be an actor, and because I feel like that's what you're paid for.
Well, yeah. Well, many, not all, but many great actors. It's a great actor, amateur person. You know.
Right. Oh, like, yeah.
Completely.
Of course. That's good.
But that's not my quote. That's actually what I'm blanking on his name. The guy who wrote Pet Sounds with Brian Wilson.
Oh.
The songwriter said that Brian Wilson, professional musician, amateur human being.
Oh, right.
But that is true. But there's also, again, like we're similar ages, that's a generational thing as well. Like, I don't know, were you ever said when you cried as a child?
Yeah, I wasn't encouraged to cry.
Were you ever told, I will give you something to cry about?
Of course.
Yeah, which no kid ever ticks up on. All right. Let's see what you have.
Because what's bothering me right now is obviously not at the level of...
Yeah. And having children now, I realize... I know it was a different time.
Right.
I know it was a different culture.
Right.
But that's a psychotically sadistic thing to say.
Of course.
It's really psychotic.
I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah, I'll give you something to cry. No, I seem to be fine.
Wait, I'm recovering.
I think I have that covered. I am, in fact, crying. So we're all good.
Whatever technique or
we're totally fine
belt
here.
You had in mind.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have taken that. I have that well in hand.
I'm doing it.
But that was also culturally the biggest I remember, and this was said like a badge of honor. Kennedys don't cry.
Right. No question.
Maybe that's why you're all alcoholics. Kennedys don't cry, said the alcoholic, staggering out of the bar, picking fights on 7th Street.
Can't get enough alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, well, maybe you should cry. And by the way, you have reason to cry.
But
you have reason to cry.
We'll admit that stoic New England.
Yeah, it's very New England.
But it was very much appreciated, I thought, culturally.
Yeah,
it was. That they were like,
tough it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And carry on. I think it's almost a British thing, right? Would you say? I'm just trying I'm just trying to figure out why that was like.
Yeah, because it's not a Brahmin thing. I think it's more of an Irish thing and possibly very British.
Mm-hmm.
Keep calm and carry on.
Right. These step up Catholic Protestants.
Yeah, whatever. We don't cry. It's a macho thing. It's a macho shithead thing. We don't cry.
So anyway, so back to Wayne, because that's why we're here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so
King of Las Vegas.
I do
take
feel like he's that. You know, if you hear his voice without knowing, he sounds like Peggy Lee.
Not only does he sound like Peggy Lee, but
you get that, right?
Of course I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now he looks like a Munchie Chi.
Well, I know. Well, that's just the surgeries, right?
I hate to speak ill of someone so beloved.
As Wayne Newton.
No. On Emmy night.
Yeah.
Carol Burnett posted a photo of herself on Instagram with Norman Lear, and she is trying to smile, and the riot that is breaking out in the lines of her face from the Botox and the implants.
I know.
It just, we're all gonna die.
I know.
We're all gonna die. Yeah. You know?
All right, we're done.
Yeah, we're all done. The end.
Hey, good talking to you.
I don't know if that gets into body dysmorphia. That's a whole other issue that we'll get into in
right,
the second
of course,
half.
Of course, of course.
But as you're saying, Wayne Newton, there's no one in these people's lives that go, we're done. Dude, we're done.
Right.
How old are you? How old is he?
Yeah, he's in his 80s.
Yeah,
gotta be, right?
Jet black hair.
Yeah.
No, we're all done. You know, Michael Jackson, if somebody had just got, I wouldn't cut the nose off.
Right.
I used to see him coming out of Golden Apple Comics.
Right, right. I saw him at a newsstand once.
Yeah, with the mask on.
Yeah.
And I just felt bad for him. He just looked this weird skinny guy.
But he could
say, I was never wowed. Like, oh,
you weren't wowed by the entertainment?
No, I was wowed by the entertainment, but I was never like...
What's your favorite Michael Jackson song?
I think it was from Off the Wall.
Want to be starting something?
That's not on Off the Wall, is it?
That's not?
I don't know.
Then once again... Just I was just exposed.
No, Wannabe Sight and Sound, I believe, is on Thriller. No, I'll tell you which one it is. It's his theme. It's Ben.
Ah.
His theme to the rat movie,
of course,
Ben.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. He wrote a song about a movie about rats. So
He didn't write that song.
He sang it, though.
He sang it, right.
Yeah.
Willard.
Willard was the first movie.
And then this was the sequel.
Yeah, Ben. It was this other rat and Willard. Very good movies. Very entertaining movies.
Still.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw?
But I bet they're not as good as you remember. But
I never see them on.
They were always on. For those of you who don't know, let's just quick.
Yeah.
There was this movie in 1971 starring Bruce Davison.
Yep.
Who was the evil senator in the X-Men movies. But back then he was a kid. He was a kid named Willard. And he was a quiet kid. And he somehow befriended a bunch of rats. And he had two rats that were his favorite. Socrates, who was the white rat. And Ben, who was a brown rat. And he had all these other rats. And somehow he ended up working for Ernest Borgnine. And Ernest Borgnine did him wrong.
From the Dirty Dozen.
Right. And McHale's Navy. Beloved from McHale's Navy. And
Oscar D. won an Oscar in 1955, if I'm not mistaken.
For Marty.
Yep.
For Marty.
Yep.
Sidebar, once on the Universal Studios tour in 1985 or 6.
Yep.
With Michael Rosenberg, also known as Jackie Diamond.
Know him very well.
Yep.
Bought some movie posters off of him.
Yep.
He dropped out of life and went into religion.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I don't know where he is now, but I see a giant beard.
right. And 12 kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, did you buy HUD? He had HUD.
No, this is you want to know what I bought?
Yeah.
Okay. I bought a Jerry Lewis double feature.
Natch.
I bought maybe the most valuable one, A Face in the Crowd.
Mm, I have that poster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Power. He loved it. He drank it in raw gulps. I forget the, yeah.
So good. It almost has like a hologram on it, that little, it's an amazing poster.
Yeah. Amazing poster, amazing movie, ahead of its time.
Of course. I felt like we had a face in the crowd moment and it didn't matter. What did you think of that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it didn't matter.
It was like, oh, this is the light. Oh, no.
He's an asshole. Great.
Oh, he's exposed. The curtain has been pulled back.
Yeah. Nah.
No.
No, it was like when Bud Schulberg wrote What Makes Sammy Run, and agents and managers would come up to him and go, Sammy Glick is my idol. And he'd be like, no,
wait,
Sammy Glick is the bad guy.
It's a cautionary tale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, we were just talking about, I know we're going all over the place.
Yeah,
I'll go back
okay.
to the posters, but that Jerry Lewis episode that I was listening to about I Am Muscular Dystrophy, I think was written by Bud Schulberg.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the, so the face in the crowd. I love it. Love the movie. Love
Andy
the poster.
Griffith, amazing.
Yeah. You know who else has it in his office? Jimmy Miller. Do you know him?
Yes. And I'm going to tell you right now, the one he has in his office was a gift from me.
What? Mm-hmm. How crazy is that? We should end right now. No, turn it off.
Yeah, that was a gift from me.
Now I'm super curious. And I'll go with the rest
of it. He has an insert, I believe. Does he have the A sheet?
Yeah. I don't know if it's an insert, but it's the poster. It's the poster.
I'm 99% sure that's a gift.
How much is that? What do you think you paid for something like that?
No, well, back then I bought that when I was with Jimmy as a client.
Oh, I didn't know you had no idea.
Okay. Yeah, I was a
because I was with Dennis Miller for a number of years.
As a management client? Yeah, he's my manager. For those of you who don't know, Jimmy Miller is the comedian Dennis Miller's brother. Jimmy Miller manages Will Ferrell, Jim Carrey, Judd Apatow, everyone who's funny, except me. But anyway, no, I gave him that, and I got it because Kevin Rooney had it, and I really wanted it because I loved it, and I bought it.
I love it.
I probably bought it at Eddie Brandt's Hollywood.
No, you did. So they had it there. I thought it was a little more rare than that. You could just walk in.
No, that's not really as rare as you'd think. I have Carnival of Souls. That's pretty rare.
That's the one?
Yeah. That's not the one. I have a couple of rare ones.
This is like the baseball card collectors the guy doesn't like sports.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
I have Plan 9 from Outer Space, an original, which is worth a lot of money, and it was Vampiras. It was Myla and Hermes' one that I got from Myla. Yeah, we had a face in the crowd moment, and it didn't matter. But you really need to see the movie to see how that should have turned out in a moral world. In a just universe, would have turned out. Ha ha! He's an asshole. We love him.
Yeah. That was amazing to watch that.
So I'm on the Universal Studios tour in 1985 with Michael Rosenberg, who I know from Boston.
Yeah.
We're on the tram, and we go by Ernest Borgnine, who is on the lot filming something. I'm going to say Blue Thunder. I don't know. He's filming something. And he's way. Hey! Now I haven't seen Marty at that point. I'm 21.
Okay.
And Rosenberg, who was born 70,
right,
goes by Ernest Borgnine and he goes, "Hey, fatty!" And Borgnine laughs and waves. And I'm like, what a terrible thing to say.
Don't worry about my friend here. He doesn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He's very rude. But Borgnine.
It's worse than anything Joe Flynn ever said to you on that show.
Now we're really skipping around. I was at an Elvis Costello concert at the Greek Theater, and he walked out. And it was back when he was a little beefy, and he looked just like Joe Flynn. And he walked out on stage, and whoever I was sitting with, it might have been Mike Scully, went, "Cheese it, it's Binghamton."
That's even a better reference. It was Captain Binghamton, right?
Yeah. What is it, McHale? What is it? Right. And how did you become a 911 dispatcher? Did you just fall into that?
Yeah. At the time I was bartending, and a friend of mine that I went to high school with, his dad.
First you were bartending.
I was bartending because that's the training you need to deal with people. It's like dispatching light. But my friend, his dad was actually the detective for the police department, and I was whining about
the
not
detective
making enough
in
money.
Newbury?
Wow. And he goes, "Well, if you need money, we need dispatches." And I was like, "Well, I've never even taken a criminal justice class. Yeah. Like, what do I?" And he goes, "That's fine." I'm like, "Okay." He goes, "You figure it out. The lives of many, sure." So I had to take a psych eval. I had to take like a 30-page notarized application and also a written test and all this madness.
Civil service.
And I got hired. Yeah.
Exam.
And I got hired, and it was funny because I was one of only three women that worked at the police department, and I was also the youngest. So you know that they took one look at me, and the dispatcher at the time was just a character. And she took one look at me and she goes, "If you're going to work here, we got to cover up those tits." And so she like, I was like, "Oh my God, why?" And so she, of course, then they put me in an oversized polo. So you couldn't even know what gender I was.
Right.
Like,
you can work here, you got to cover up those tits.
You got to cover up those tits. The best part, speaking of calls that I had gotten, was I was working one day and I got a call from the high school that a bunch of kids got caught smoking pot, one of which was my sister. And the worst part was that at the time I was dating one of the cops that worked there, and there was naturally, no interdepartmental dating allowed.
Sure.
So nobody could know. And he was on duty and he's like, I can't go to the fucking school right now and go and like bring your sister in or talk to her. Whatever. Like she's gonna out us.
Yeah.
So it was, it was.
I was one of the kids in a similar, me and a bunch of my friends were, I never drank.
I was a pretty straight edge too for a long time.
Yeah. I didn't, everybody in my family drank and I was just like, I just did the opposite.
Isn't it funny? That was me too. I turned me off for a long time.
Yeah. And it was like, they're into sports. I'll be into Star Trek. You know, it's just like, and it was, I've told the story before, like my dad couldn't conceive of the fact that I didn't drink. I wasn't into hunting. I wasn't into watching sports, but I was heterosexual. Like those, he couldn't make
does
that.
Does not compute.
Dude, could not make that compute.
Yeah.
As Bob Goldthwait said, couldn't believe that I was straight, that I didn't want to go out into the woods with a bunch of guys dressed the same way as I was and watch the sun come up.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Yeah. That's Bob Gadd's joke. But long story longer, a bunch of friends of mine were out in the park at night drinking. I was there hanging out with them, not really drinking, but my friends are doing it. Cops bust us. We all get brought down to the police station. Everybody's parents comes and picks them up. Except for me, because the cop that busted us was my dad's hunting buddy. So he just drove me home.
Oh, funny.
After warned me that cop cars have square headlights. Next time you see a set of square headlights coming, screw.
Oh, my God.
And then my mother advised me not to tell my father that I was not drinking, because that would have been the thing that bugged him.
Isn't it so funny how parents have those quirks? Like, yeah. I went off-roading with a couple of my girlfriends. We were, God, what were we, like 15 or something? And we got stuck in the mud in the middle of nowhere. And my friend's dad was the chief of police. And she's like, we can't call my dad. And then my friend Jackie, she was like, oh, well, my dad's out of town. We can't call my dad. And they're like, we got to call your dad. I was like, we can't call my dad. He's a monster. Like, he's going to lose his goddamn mind because it's super late at night. I was like, forget it. Of course, I had to call him. My mom answers the phone. I'm telling her what's going on. She goes, I'm going to give you one piece of advice. She goes, you do not laugh until your father laughs. And I was
that's such great advice.
Like, oh, okay. And she's like, I don't care what happens. You do not laugh until he does. And I was like, yeah, okay. That's fair. So he was not happy.
Yeah. How long of a drive was it?
It wasn't that it was far. It was that we were in the middle of the woods. In a Jeep Wrangler, like
what are you doing out there in the woods?
Just off-roading.
No, that's what he's thinking.
Oh yeah, like what are you doing out there? Well, they also like. It's funny because my parents were the partiers. They were the ones that were always like.
Now.
They're not super old. My dad is 61, I think, mm-hmm. and my mom is 58.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not. They're pretty. They're young. I mean,
they're young.
Yeah. So, but they're out of their minds. They've always been partiers. I never was. So like
so
they.
Funny.
Oh my
yes,
God.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Your mom was born in late 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're, I just remember being a kid and be like, where's mom and dad? Oh, they're in the shed. Why are they always in the shed? And it's like, oh, because they were out smoking a ton of pot.
Oh, is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I found out that my mom smoked pot, I asked her because I was like, no, she doesn't. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
super,
sure.
Like, of course not. And I asked my mom, I was like, mom, I heard, like, do you smoke pot? She goes, what were you doing in my purse?
That's a great tell.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, way to hide it, mom. That's way to hide it.
That's like the old joke. I think it's, I don't know who tells this joke. It's like, the cops pull you over. You've been drinking? You can't smell vodka.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Ugh.
You're into like nerdy stuff. Like you go to Comic-Con a lot. You're into the X-Files. You're into Buffy. You're into that kind of stuff. When did you get into all that stuff?
When I was,
'cause that's not girly.
No. And I was never super.
Might be now.
Am I girly? Is that what you said?
No, that's not girly. Maybe now.
I was never really raised in a household where
what's your sibling? You have one sister?
I have a sister and a brother. They're both
where are you?
Way younger than me. I'm the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's 7 years younger than me. My brother's 10 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just weird. It's almost people are like, are they from different marriages? I'm like, no, my parents are still together. It was just like really weird timing. But I started to get into it when I was pretty young. I remember I used to watch The X-Files with my dad because it was on Sunday nights.
Right.
And my mom would be at work. Because she was a waitress. And so my dad and I used to stay up. Oh, at the place that I worked with my mom, the Hungry Traveler. down the beach. Down the beach.
Newburyport, Hungry Traveler, Newburyport.
So, it's Salisbury.
Salisbury.
On the way down to the beach.
When I was very young, my mom worked at the Double D.
What is that?
Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, I was like, what is the, I was like, please tell me your mom wasn't in a strip club.
No, no, no.
That's why, that was like where my brain went. Ooh, boy.
My mom worked at the Seventh Fail.
No, yeah.
She worked at Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh man. My mom has had like a crazy amount of weird jobs. She's kind of done everything. Like now she works at a liquor store, which is like, sure. But like before, I mean, she was a medical assistant for a while. She worked at GE, which is where she met my dad. And they always tell me, they're like, yeah, you were conceived in building 17. I was like, oh, great.
Thanks.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks for that. Yeah. But yeah, she worked as like a secretary. She worked in it for an airline. She's kind of done everything.
Yeah. It's like my sister.
Yeah.
My sister has a different job every time I talk to her.
Yeah.
But now my sister's job, she works in Connecticut. She is an animal control officer.
Oh, Jesus.
Meaning roadkill scraper.
Yep. Or dog catcher. One or the other. Yeah.
Yeah. Your parents did that thing like, Mom, my show got picked up. We're going to do a second season of the show.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Your sister just is the first lead officer animal disposal in Connecticut now. Yeah. I wrote and created a TV show. Your sister scraped up a deer yesterday. Yeah, okay.
It's,
you're right.
You're, yep. Yeah. You're right. She won this round. Like,
I'll get you.
My God. Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's all relativism.
Like, I can't just have a normal conversation with my parents on the phone. I can never just keep their focus for an entire phone call. Like, absolutely not.
No, no, no.
Oh, absolutely not. There's always some other, Ma, are you listening to me? Hold on, I'm watching this movie. Mom, why are you watching a movie? I'm literally on the phone with you.
As I've often said, like, I just want my parents to say those three little words, okay, you win. With my mom, I'll literally call, say hello, and I can just put down the phone and fold clothes. I was like, well, your sister came over the other day. She's, your cousin bought a truck, and then just like, I'll pick it up. Your cousin at the golf course, blah, 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 squirrels near the, blah, 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 blah,
oh, yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
My favorite is when
Cloud
I call.
Cloud looked like a truck.
The best is I'll call my mom and she'll be like, yeah, I'm at work, but I can talk. And then she, and then she's talking. And then all of a sudden I'll hear, yeah, yeah, the Jack Daniels is in the third row. Yeah. Yeah. It's on sale. $7.99. What was that, honey? And then she'll click back and I'm like, what do you do? Mom. When then all of a sudden she'll be like, hold on a second. I got a bunch of people. She'll put the phone down. She'll completely forget that she was talking to me. So I'm sitting there on hold and I'm just listening to transaction after transaction. And I'm like, she doesn't even know I'm here. I'm like screaming into the phone. I'm like, this is the worst.
There is a difference. Like, you know, it's like, yes, we've always had hurricanes. Yes, we've always had storms. But no, these are stronger and more frequent than they used to be.
Right.
2016 was the hottest year on record, second to 2015, second to 2014.
Right.
And the thing that they didn't factor in the original analogy and the original breakdown was as the ice shelf melts.
Yes.
The temperature metastasizes because the ice is gone. The ice used to reflect the heat back up into space.
Yeah.
Now it is absorbed. It's literally going from white to black.
Right.
For instance, now it's absorbed. It's the reason that you wear dark clothes in the winter and light clothes in the summer.
Yeah.
And the less of that white is there to reflect the heat back, the ocean gets warmer and warmer and warmer.
Which is one reason the Houston hurricane Harvey was so bad, because it dropped 50 fucking inches in that area. And the reason it did is because the moisture from the ocean, you know, the oceans had warmed so much. But what's amazing when you watch the coverage, you know, the ghoulish coverage of Irma's been churning for days, you know, and I'm just walking around my apartment going, honey, put up the hurricane louder, louder.
Did they write a new hurricane theme, or is it the same one from Harvey?
Yeah, right. But they never mention, all the corporate media never mentions the climate breakdown that's occurring. You know, they never mention that.
You hear a little bit of it on MSNBC. Chris Hayes.
Does he? He's Chris the Hayes, only one. But it's very little, though. It's very little.
You and know, climate breakdown is a much better way of putting it than climate change was a way of softening. I think climate change came from Frank Luntz, who is a right-wing pollster. And I think...
Hold it. Say that slower.
Right. He does polls. And he found out, I think it was...
Right-wing pollster.
It must have been before W. that climate change was a way to soften global warming. Global warming had people to alarms. Climate change. Oh, it's a little softer. And it's actually more accurate to the, in the sense that things aren't always going to get hotter. It's like, oh, global warming, there's more snow. Okay, so there's no global warming. No, there's more snow because there's more water in the air. And it's actually that all ties together.
Right.
And but climate breakdown is
it's a great term. Again, I heard that from some UK scientist I believe said, hey, let's call it what it is, because you call it climate change and people are like, we're having a little change.
I like it when there's seasons.
Climate breakdown. You get people's attention a little, but I mean, I was reading an article yesterday that was saying, fucking, we're talking about Atlantis, New York being underwater.
Yeah, and by like 2060 or something.
Christ, here's I'm glad I'm 58, and I don't mean to brag. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to live through that where you're kayaking where New York used to be, sending down robotic things to look for coins where in Wall Street, you know, like, giving tour, like instead of tour buses, you have tour kayaks where New York used to be.
It would be weird that it's still, New York is covered in water, but in August, it still smells like pee. How is this possible?
Well, that's because everybody's peeing and drinking their own urine.
and we come full circle.
And New York is still vibrant, just as
it's still alive. The Village Voice. Which I think just shut down?
It did.
That's a heartbreaker.
It is. I used to read, you ever read Nat Hentoff?
Of course.
And Jules Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
I got introduced in The Voice.
Yeah. How did The Village Voice go out of business?
Because nobody...
let me rephrase that. How is the LA Weekly still being printed?
Is it?
Yeah.
I've heard gone way downhill.
Well, they have a new slogan now with more whack-offable classified ads.
Oh, geez. Is that what they're doing?
It's just big ads for showgirls on the back.
Oh, my God.
There's two things that you think about. There's one, the law of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. Something is going to go wrong, or something is going to happen that we don't plan. And there'll be some element of this that we don't anticipate, good or bad.
Yeah.
There's also that, and I go back to the man I quote a lot, George Carlin, that bit he had was so talk about prescient. He was like, the planet is fine.
Oh, yeah.
The people are fucked. You know, the worst thing that's going to happen to the planet is it's going to become uninhabitable for humans. And then it will fix itself into a new version. The ozone will rebuild itself once we've stopped and carbon emissions it'll have a new form. But like anything else that gets overrun with a certain population, it's the nature of a system. Now, whether it means that we will be decimated from the earth or that we will have a great halving of our population, we don't know. Here's the one thing I defy anyone to argue with me, because you always have to look, you know, you can hear people bitching about left wing Dana and Ed. Here's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Not nothing.
At this point, the deniers are out of there. I mean, well, I guess they're deniers. They deny everything.
Well, they've changed their name now to skeptic.
Have they?
Yeah, because denial is quite literally refusing to accept something that's true. That's the definition of denial. I'm in denial. I can't accept this, so I'm in denial. But now they're like, well, we're skeptics. And I really think it traces back to the big tribune of climate change was Al Gore. And people didn't like Al Gore, so the thing that he's concerned about can't be true. I really think that that's the giant part of it. And that the fossil fuel industry underwrites a large part of the conservative media, and they have a lot of vested interest in that. Yeah.
So big time.
There's a lot of that.
And the current fucking freak clown show that, I mean, Trump has eliminated. I mean, he didn't.
Yeah, no.
He just said, you know, screw the Paris Accords. He said Scott Pruitt, the head of the it's scary. Yeah. I mean, it's just all.
Yeah, the guy he wants to put in charge of NASA doesn't believe in climate change. One of NASA's biggest jobs is monitoring climate change.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is like the.
When are we going to correct this? I mean.
It is like the Joker.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Like, I do, you know, the that's funny you say that because I do Trump. I say Trump should just cut his lips.
Gwynplaine and, himself?
Yeah, and just make it a permanent smile, and I could accept him better.
Yeah.
You know, him just – because he's got the orange hair.
Yeah.
And just come on and go, like he starts like that.
Yeah, that would be great.
Guess who's the head of NASA?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. it should be that.
I'm putting Woody Allen in charge of international adoption. Oh, gee. You're just trying to make me mad.
Rex Tillerson. I mean, talk about the fossil fuel industry. I mean, Rex Tillerson, the head of fucking Exxon, which is famous for doing the climate denial funding.
Right.
The climate denial funding.
Right.
But these people are crazy and they're so short-sighted because they're making money. That's all they want to do. They want to make money out of the oil and the gas that's in the ground. There's still money to be made. But, hey guys, here's something. There's going to be no place to spend it.
Yeah. Well,
because there's going to be no fun. I mean,
it is ironic that when you look at what city in America is the headquarters of the fossil fuel industry,
it's Houston, right?
It's Houston.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That didn't look too good.
Yeah. But it'll never affect those fuckers.
And he,
I just, the thing that I didn't like seeing my man, Joel Osteen, getting a bad rap. I love my Joel. I was calling the prayer line for Joel. My mom, when I was a kid, was, and probably still is, obsessed with Oral Roberts.
I remember Oral Roberts. Yeah.
My dad says that was the only Oral she was obsessed with. but, and Oral at the time was building the City of Hope, which was a hospital in Utah.
Did that ever happen?
It was, I think it's, I think it became a thing.
Okay.
But what we used to do is my mom, it's pay as you pray. You know, it's like, you can't just be a fan of Oral Roberts. You gotta kick him some dough.
Yeah, of course.
And so we didn't have any money. So my mom taught me how to shoplift and we would go.
Are you being serious?
Totally serious.
Jesus.
My mother and I would go grocery shopping and we would steal X amount of the food.
Holy shit.
And
I didn't know you were sort of a Dickens character.
Yeah, I guess in retrospect I was.
Jeez. Hello, Fagin.
Hey, hello. May I put some more boiled ham in me coat?
It's and the goat child.
I had a denim coat with an elastic waistband and it would puff up and I would just fill it with cold cuts. And then the money we saved, my dad would give her $100 to get groceries for the week.
And she would come back with $200 worth?
Well, she would come back with all the groceries you needed, but she'd saved like $30.
Oh right. We'd, and that 30, we'd boosted, don't tell me that 30 would go to Oral.
And that
30
would go to Oral. That 30 would go to Oral Roberts. And all that does is put you on the hook for more. It's like, well, if you can give us 30, we really need 50.
By the way, that's what bugs me a little. I like giving to because I'm an animal lover big time. And by the way, the Houston hurricane, the Irma hurricane, especially the Houston hurricane with the flooding, seeing the videos of the animals just fucking, it just kills me because I feel like people have a choice to an extent, even though, and by the way, another thing about the hurricanes is that it seems to always be poor people suffering, like the people on the hills in Houston.
Yeah, they're gone. Yeah. I will say this. I'm going to be not cynical for a minute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Seeing how people came to each other's aid and seeing those videos of people, like the guys that the dolphin washed up in their yard in Florida and they put it in a truck and drove it to the ocean and took and saved it. You know, it's like,
that's really cool.
That you know,
did they do an Instagram photo of like their arm around the dolphin and they put like a corn cob pipe in the dolphin? Like, cause I don't like that shit when you're using dolphins.
They drew a big dick and balls on the dolphin. But you know, that's like, that gives you hope. It's like the people at their core are by and large always really decent.
I think
it does bring out the best in people. Winston Churchill said it. You can always count on Americans to do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility. And that's exactly the case. That was us in World War II.
That is
could not have dragged
my favorite.
We did not get involved in World War II until they literally stuck their hand up their asshole and tried to manipulate us like a puppet. Like, all right, we'll get in the war. So Michael Rosenberg, you got some
posters. So I got the Jerry Lewis double feature, Facing the Crowd. A 1949 20th Century Fox movie called Always Leave Him Laughing, Milton Berle movie, where he actually not only does blackface, but puts on blackface in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, shows how he did. Like, he's so comfortable doing it. Yeah. Obviously.
Just to that end, Whoopi Goldberg was recently criticizing something as being a minstrel show. Wasn't she the one that told Ted Danson to wear blackface?
Friar's Roast, yeah.
Just checking. Trying to keep an even scorecard.
But my favorite one I think I got from him was Three Sheet. Wow. Do you want to explain that to?
A three sheet, an A sheet movie theater poster is 27 by 41. That's Jesus. The standard.
Okay, now I see why you need the medication. Yes, to the inch, he knows.
That's the standard. Well, I'm collecting movie posters. That's the standard. And a three sheet, if I'm not mistaken, is basically that times three. It's a three panel.
Right.
I have a six sheet.
What?
Of the original Planet of the Apes, which is basically take a regular movie poster, turn it on its side, add five of them, and that's what you get.
And what is that a picture of?
It is an orange, and there's a cage with humans in it, and an insert picture of Maurice Evans as Dr. Zaius. Or I like to call it the deal closer once the ladies get into the boudoir.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
That's what I call Operation Panty Drop.
Okay. So anyway,
if showing them the original flying saucer from Plant 9 doesn't do it,
I'll that's the closer. Bring in the closer.
Yeah, all right. Bring in the closer. And she brings out the coffee cake. I bring out the Apes poster and... steak knives.
Got two. This little kid named Elisa.
So where were we going? We were talking about Michael Rosenberg.
Okay. Yeah, so I bought three sheets. One of them was the Jerry Lewis double feature.
Right.
The other one was probably my favorite thing I bought from him, which is three sheet of The Stooge, which is my favorite Martin and Lewis movie.
Right.
And then I got a three sheet. This is probably the gayest thing, I'm going to say it, which is the...
a poster of two men making out.
One guy with his shirt off. The other one looks like a preppy dude.
The gayest thing I own is those two guys having sex right there.
Guys and Dolls from...
Oh, that's a great poster. I've seen that poster. I've seen that poster. He used to live in the Hollywood Tower. He was the only open micer that lived in the Hollywood Tower and had a baby grand piano in his apartment.
You're talking about Michael.
Yeah. Mike was a rich kid from Boston who wanted to be a comedian, and he lived out here and lived a life of luxury.
Yeah. So that's what I bought from him.
Mike, we used to go out to dinner with Mike
all
the time.
He's a beautiful guy.
But we used to go out to dinner all the time, and he would always pick up the tab and go, just give me money, and I'll pay it on my credit card. And then we found out later that his dad paid his credit card bills, so he'd go out to dinner and make $60.
Sounds like Rosie.
I say it with love. I don't know.
No, I love the dude. I love. He was just so unique and just like.
Have you talked to him?
I do have his phone number.
Does he live in Israel now?
No, I think he's in the United States.
Oh, really? Because I know he lived in Israel for a while. Oh, God bless him.
So anyway, that's
no pun intended.
Yeah, that's my movie poster. I obviously not as big as collector as you. In fact,
I have.
But I love him. I love him. What date did Planet of the Apes open?
Well, it was a roadshow release, so it staggered in different cities. But I believe it opened in February of 1968. Mm-hmm. I know way too much about that movie.
Of course, it's your favorite.
Everybody gives me calls. Like, I get a call today that when War of the Planet of the Apes comes out on DVD, this place is going to do a signing with Matt Reeves, the director, and they just call me, would you interview him? Like, I'm the Planet of the Apes.
No, it must be great.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's lovely.
Amazing. I remember that year specifically because I was like 9 years old.
Yeah.
Saw that movie.
Oh, you did. You did, yeah.
I remember in... April 2001 opens.
Right. They had to beat 2001 to the theaters.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they both, and I remember I got into a huge debate with my brother, who eventually became a film editor, about what was a better movie. And I always thought Planet of the Apes was much better. It was like a joke for him that I would even say that.
There's an argument to be made that Planet of the Apes is a more entertaining movie,
you're right,
and 2001 is a more important piece of cinema.
There's no I feel like Plan A is kind of important, though.
It is important. It's a hamburger.
Right.
And 2001 is a steak.
What is it? It's almost like pulp. Yeah, right?
It's a Planet of the Apes is a delicious cheeseburger.
Right.
And 2001 is a delicious steak. The fact that a delicious steak exists does not negate the value of a delicious cheeseburger.
All right. I'll go with that. But I remember they both came out that same year. And
nothing else happened that year of import, 1968. Very quiet year in our history.
Quiet. Serene.
And do you remember Bobby Kennedy getting shot? Do you remember all that stuff?
I remember John Kennedy getting shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must have been five.
Four.
Remember that?
Because I lived in Silver Spring, Maryland.
But you're born here.
No, I was born here, but we moved very quickly. My dad got sick and we had to move back home and live with my grandparents. So when I was back there, we're right in like...
Yeah, you're right there. Yeah,
ground zero for the whole thing. So that was... And then, I remember Bobby... Obviously, Martin Luther King got killed is the reason I moved from Maryland to Florida.
Why? Why was that?
Yeah, because there was, those crazy riots afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, nothing crazy will ever happen in Florida.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I guess it didn't have that. What do you think tipped that? Like, what happened? Or is it just
the destruction of the American education system? The destruction of the gutting of the public education system in our country?
No. What do you think? No, I meant what tipped, like, Florida being the craziest state in the
what age? I just said. I just think that in the 80s, we gutted the public education system. And just for some reason, everybody's
moved to Florida?
Yeah, I don't know. They all rolled out of Florida.
No, so what happened was my dad's had a drugstore. He was a pharmacist. But this is my stepdad. My actual dad died. The one who got
when
sick.
He got ill.
Yeah. Thank you for taking responsibility. A lot of people don't.
What is it? The Big C?
It was the Big C smoking, but at that time it was in like one of the lungs. So they were like, let's just take the lung out.
Oh god,
that was their strategy, and then complications from that.
Yeah.
So. So anyway, my stepdad has a drugstore, so that got in D.C. We live right on the border.
Did you call your stepdad dad?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And then...
And how old were you when he entered your life?
About that time, about five. Okay. About five, yeah. So he had a drugstore that got looted because he didn't...
Oh, right, because of the... after Martin Luther King?
April 4th, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Shot rang out in the Memphis sky.
Yeah, the song's wrong. It was at dusk. It was not in the morning.
Yeah. Crazy.
Full of shit. Full of shit.
I don't even think they're from Ireland.
Oh, they're from Ireland. Oh,
so I'd love that you know that. So that's how we moved to Florida.
I believe RFK was June 10. June 5th or June 10th, RFK.
Well, I know he lasted a few days.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, he lasted.
Do you know what hospital he died in?
No.
Same hospital I was born in.
Oh, no.
The Hospital of the Good Samaritan.
Where's that?
It's here. It's right up. It's in L.A. Yeah.
Wow. That is creepy.
They called it Good Sam. What was the...
Good Sam? Wow. And it was Joseph Mankiewicz.
What?
One of the Mankiewicz brothers was his press secretary. He was the one that announced it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. I believe it was Joseph Mankiewicz.
How he lasted like, was it 2 days? It was a little bit, right?
Yeah. And not more than that. Yeah. Have you ever been to the Ambassador?
Briefly, when our mutual friend, Steve Heitner, was filming The Marrying Man.
Oh, really?
They shot in the Ambassador.
Oh, weird. I went into the Ambassador, I forget with who.
Right. It was Rosie Grier.
With Rosie Grier and Joe Flynn. And we were going through the Ambassador, and I went through the kitchen.
Went
to the kitchen where RFK was killed. And giant plastic holder, like I walked by the AC thing, and you get... And I said, why is the AC down here if it's empty? And he said, it's not on. That's it. Drawing our conclusion.
Wait, all right.
I just was
that
in.
That sounds like a crazy thing.
I just got hit by a blast of cold air in the kitchen.
You're
of
saying
the
in a paranormal kind of way.
I don't know what it was. I'm just, I honestly, I'm not saying it was anything other than what it
I'm
was.
I'm going to say right now, just right, seriously, you can cut this out of the podcast because that was crazy. Feel free to just delete whatever you just said.
No, it did happen. I don't even mean anything. It might have just been some cold air that I walked into, like a weird collection of condensation or something, or it was the sun wasn't shining in that part of the room and the air around it was warmed and that wasn't warmed. But
you're saying it like there was some weird thing happening.
No, I'm saying that some people would have that happen and be convinced that a weird thing happened.
Oh, I see. You're not.
No, but it did happen.
Jesus.
Yeah. Right. And I was taken on board a UFO.
Okay. Well, that, you leave that in. Leave that in.
Anybody who gets on a plane and doesn't know what kind of plane it is on board a UFO.
Right, of course. This is a 737? No, 767.
No, so, but I wanted to ask you about this. You went to college in New York.
Yes, sir.
Where you worked with somebody for whom I am completely fascinated.
Oh, no.
Brother Theodore.
Yes.
Who I believe is the, you know, things cycle around.
Yes.
You know, everything. I've talked, you know, like Donald Trump, there's been Donald Trumps before. They just get more in
Trumpian.
The future. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I feel that Eddie Pepitone is really a descendant of Brother Theodore.
Oh, that is interesting. You know? No question.
I say that with as a compliment to both.
No question.
For those of you who don't know, who was Brother Theodore and what was he like?
Right after I did, when I went to NYU, I started doing like a one-man show that I had done in college at this little theater called the 13th Street Theater, which is, believe it or not, right on 13th.
Really?
Yeah. And he was doing
what should we call the theater? I
don't know, they're very creative.
The 12th Street Theater.
These are very creative people in New York.
And about what year is this?
This is like 81, maybe. Okay, this is before I've ever passed at a comedy club.
So this is New York City in 1981. Koch is still the mayor, or is it Dinkins?
No, it's Koch.
It's Koch.
Koch, yeah.
Times Square is a jungle. You can get killed in Times Square.
No question. The Lower East Side is just for what we used to call bums.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they still use that term?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, but guys are squeegees, and it was just drug dealers. And
it was a hell. It was a dangerous place.
The Bowery was not...
The Bowery was the Bowery. It wasn't it wasn't gentrified yet. Yeah. Right. No, I think everybody who lived in the Bowery got swept into the bay. No, and that was also the height of, like, you know, that was when CBGBs was going, and
you
had, like, Blondie was just coming up, and Talking Heads were all that great stuff. But New York City was a dangerous place.
No question. No question.
And the first thing I saw when I got out of the I went to UMass. I came down to New York City for a weekend.
UMass
Amherst.
Yeah.
Took me and my friend Danny McNeil, took the bus down to Manhattan for the weekend, get out at Times Square. Got off the bus, walked him on the sidewalk, and I saw a guy getting his head kicked into a brick wall.
Right.
Literally, like, if it was a movie, people go, it wouldn't happen
too
quick.
Much, too
quick. Happened right. Walked out of the, boom, okay.
Well, you took a bus down?
Yeah, from Western Massachusetts.
So you got out of Port Authority.
Yeah, I got out of Port Authority. It's not a great place.
Neck of the woods.
Not a great place.
To this day, it's still not great.
Yeah, it was cold. It was wintertime, and I just was chestnuts the first thing I smelled when I got out.
Yeah, from the vendors?
Right.
Yep.
So,
or for the guy's blood coming out. Sometimes it has a chestnutty kind of.
Yeah, it does. It was holiday. He was wearing a green shirt and the blood was red, so it was very festive.
Of course.
Tell me.
Autumn in New York. They write songs about it.
Autumn in New York. What motivated you to come out to L.A.?
I mean, I'd done theater and stuff in high school, and I started a major in it in college, and I just hated the program, and I left.
We went to the same university.
Yeah, we both went to UMass Amherst. Yep.
Zumass. Mm-hmm. Same theater program.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, I was there for...
Where'd you live up there?
I lived in Van Meter up in Central.
Right. I was right above you.
The one that looked like Hogwarts.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I was right above you in Orchard Hill.
Man, that hill in the wintertime, trying to get up that thing. Man. Did you guys ever steal lunch trays and sled down?
Yeah, all the time. What we did. All the time, yeah.
Oh, I left there. Then I took a break from performing. Then I decided after working at the PD forever that I was like,
how long did you work for the PD?
Over 3 years.
Yeah. So you kind of like, what I find interesting about that story is you're in your mid-20s, early 20s.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. But you kind of like, you were on a track. You had a job that if you did not throw up on yourself, you would have never gotten fired from.
Yeah.
You had lifetime employment if you wanted it.
Yep. They were going to send me to the Reserve Academy to become a cop.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're dating a cop.
Yep.
You're dating probably a nice guy.
Yep.
And you could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And you went, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop all of this and go to California and get into show business.
Take me where the liberals are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was probably no small decision.
No, it wasn't. It was a crazy decision. It's because my parents still were like, "You're out of your mind." Like, no, you're not really going. You're leaving a cushy job. What are you doing?
Right.
Like, because I'm not happy. Like, yeah. This isn't what I want. Like,
say you hurt your foot and collect.
Like, you're right. Like, oh my God. Well, then I was like getting fat. We used to say they're like, "You're getting dispatch ass." I was like, "Great." Yeah. I was like, "I gotta get out of here."
Right.
But I did. I just dropped everything and took me a week. I drove cross country. I took my cat, was in the back. Still mm-hmm. have the same cat.
Did you break up with the dude? Like, I'm out.
Yeah. I was like, I got to get out of here. And he was like, well, I'll come with you. I was like, no. I was like, this isn't about you. This is like, I got to do this for me.
Yeah. Is he still a cop there?
Yeah.
Do you think that if you went into the town, he would pull you over and give you a ticket?
I don't think he'd give me a ticket. No, I don't think so. I think I'd have to be doing something real shitty and shady for him to give me a ticket.
Paul Kozlowski has a great joke about going back to his hometown and getting pulled over by the kids that used to beat him up in high school.
Oh,
do you know why I pulled you over? Because you suck.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But that's a big thing, just up and moving across the country from a lot of security and really not only starting your life over, but it's an entirely different world.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how provincial people think of Massachusetts as this liberal enclave, but it's grotesquely conservative in its liberalism.
That's the thing. Is it like,
did your parents vote for Trump?
They did.
And yeah, so did mine.
My God. It's just like, and I'm like, we didn't speak for like 6 or 7 months because of that, because I was so frustrated. And it just is like,
yeah,
We
can speak, but we don't broach. It doesn't exist.
No.
The topic does not come up. Cause you're really not asking, like even now, like mm-hmm. this is recorded the weekend of the Charlottesville, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, murder.
Yeah.
And Trump, as Michelle Obama said, the presidency, doesn't make you someone else. It reveals who you are.
Oh my God. Right.
But like to them, like I can't even say, what about now?
Yeah.
Because what you're really saying is finally admit you were wrong and they don't want to do that.
Nope.
I'm sure they think this guy's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But they're not going to tell you that.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
It's always been about, oh, well, he's different. He's not typical politician. Yeah. He's going to do stuff for the economy. It's like,
no.
Dad, do you really think that he gives a shit about you guys? Like my dad's like older. He just retired. He was in the union and like he doesn't care about the underlings. Like he does not give a shit. And it's so frustrating.
Well, this whole speech, this recording last weekend about Charlottesville had nothing to do with him being racist. It's he didn't want to admit he was wrong.
Yeah.
And so the statement that I gave is the right one.
Oh.
It doesn't matter that it was coddling Nazis. Mm. I wasn't wrong. It's always, he makes perfect sense when you realize that he's the only person that exists to him of any import.
Oh.
And the only reason he likes his kids is because they remind him of him. And that's it.
Yeah.
Because he's a malignant, clinical narcissist. By definition.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And it's not that he ignores other people. He's not aware of the concept that you exist.
It gets to the point now where anytime my phone goes off because I stupidly have all of the New York Times and Washington Post alerts on, where every time I hear my phone ding, I'm like, what is it now? And it's like a trigger. Like I can't, like I think I need to turn them off because it's just.
After the election, I turn them all off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to because I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah. No, it's hard. I mean, we're all going to be just. Everybody, like the entire country is going to need Al-Anon at the end of this.
Oh my God. Yeah. I've needed it for years.
Yeah.
Now's as good a time as any.
I know
any.
A good meeting.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk after.
A lot of Boston people in it. That'll shock you.
Oh, yeah. What a surprise. What a surprise.
Now, when you were a kid, were you watching like horror movies and science fiction stuff, or did you get into it later?
I think I got into it a little bit later. Like I did watch some stuff. I watched a lot of like whatever kind of my dad was watching because he was in control of the TV at all times.
Yeah.
So I watched a ton of Three Stooges.
On Channel 38.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Right. But I watched a ton of that. Every Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah.
I watched.
That was on Channel 56.
I love that you remember all of
these. Clint Eastwood Week on the Movie Loft.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
With Dana Hersey.
I watched a lot of old movies because my dad really liked them. So I watched a lot of like old Hollywood movies. So I got into more nerdy stuff when I got a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And like The X-Files was one of the first things that I like really got into. I used to watch a bunch of old stuff with my dad too, like all the old like 80s sci-fi stuff.
It's so interesting that you do. You want, like, to me, I love the same things, like, but earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I started watching them with my brothers or with my mother.
Yeah.
You know, like all the Universal classic horror movies, Frankenstein, Wolfman, and stuff like that, I watched with my mom.
Yeah.
On Saturday nights at 11:30. And then later, Saturday afternoons on Creature Double Feature.
Yep.
On Channel 56. And my brothers would watch Dark Shadows, which was a soap opera in the late 60s about yeah. a vampire. And I watched it and I got into Dark Shadows as a little, really little kid because mm-hmm. my brothers watched it. And even though you grow up with these weird, very normal feelings of antipathy towards your family of origin, you also go to these areas for like a psychological comfort
yeah.
food.
I never have the TV on when I'm home. If I'm going to watch TV, I'm going to watch it. Like a lot of people leave it on as background noise. And it's funny because that's a comforting thing to me because my family always did that. But I personally never do it, which
right.
is like such a weird thing. Yeah, there are certain things where you hear it, like hearing any portion of Cheers, like automatically makes me think of my family, or hearing like right. part of MASH or something that
what's
like.
What's so weird to that now, you go back to that social thing.
Yeah.
My parents now have a television set the size of a wall.
Oh my God. That's the one thing my dad will spend money on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, their television set looks like somebody stole a drive-in movie screen
it's
and
ridiculous.
Erected it in the living room. Yeah. And it's on Fox.
Oh yeah.
All day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 1984. These giant heads in their room all, in their house all day, pounding this message into their skull. That
yep.
one party is evil and one party is great. And it's this guy and this, and it's absolutely propaganda.
Oh yeah.
And it works. The concept that Hillary Clinton is not the devil. They can't get to that concept.
It's hard too. Cause like, I love my mom, but she'll kind of latch on to what my dad says. So a lot of times it's like whatever
just
my dad
to
is
get
spitting
along.
Out. Yeah. So whatever my dad is kind of spitting out, she'll kind of go with the same school of thought. So it's tough because if you're fighting with one, you're inadvertently fighting with
yeah,
both.
Yeah, with both of them.
Yeah.
And I go right to the, like, there are double standards in politics?
No. What?
But yeah, it's like, I go right to the Access Hollywood tape. Barack Obama was on that tape. It was the last time you'd ever heard his name.
Yep.
And it's okay when Donald Trump does it because you expect less from him because he's not as smart as Barack Obama. But that's where they never admit it. But it's like, what is the other, I don't know how to get around this. Anything that happens after that, if you voted for him after that, then we don't need to talk. You know, you made a decision that reveals something about yourself that I just don't agree with.
And I wonder too what, because so much crazy shit has happened at this point that like, what is the breaking point going to be for people?
There is none.
There's got to be something.
I don't think there is.
Like,
I think they break if the, you know, right now we're benefiting a good economy from the end of the Obama administration. And if the job numbers go down, then he'll lose it. When Republicans can't ride his coattails anymore and he loses enough support that these people start losing jobs, then they'll turn on him. But, you know, Nixon had 24% job approval the day he resigned.
Over.
I can't imagine this going 4 years. That's the thing.
I know.
Imagine it going.
It hasn't.
We're all going to have gray hair.
It hasn't even been a year.
No.
Since even the election. Never mind when his presidency started. It's been
yeah.
seven.
Well,
like
months.
Seven. Yeah.
And I'm exhausted.
I am too. I like it. Because when it, and everything started happening, I was like a news junkie and I was listening to the New York Times podcast every day. And like, just the first thing I would do in the morning was go through, you know, New York Times, the Washington Post, like just going through all of it. I can't do it anymore. Like I had to separate myself because it was just getting to be too much. And
yeah.
I'm like, how am I going to survive another couple of years of this?
Yeah. You don't want to be in an information bubble.
No.
But it's also, I don't understand voting for him.
Right.
Like, I get Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, John McCain, John Kasich. Like, yeah, I get it. He is a carnival act.
Yeah.
Has been for decades. And if you can't see through that, then it's not if Obama was elected, this is the, no, it would be if rerun from What's Happening was elected. That would have been the one like, hey, wait a minute.
My favorite Churchill quote is, and I live by this, success is going from failure to failure gracefully.
Wow. That is brilliant.
I love it.
It's That's true, fantastic. Right? Fantastic.
You know,
who's the filmmaker who did Preston Sturges? His book is called Between Flops, which is so perfect. It's a great way to describe it. It's the sort of thing going from failure to failure gracefully. And it's funny you talk about Preston Sturges, Sullivan's Travels, Hail the Conquering Hero. I mean, you could make those movies today, but nobody does.
Yeah. Why are Hollywood comedies? And I think I know the answer. I don't know if you agree with this, but why are Hollywood comedies? They steer away from class issues, the real issues. You know, they do a lot of bromances and, you know, there'll be a funny bit here, a funny bit there, but it's like something you leave the theater and a minute after you're out of the theater, you forget about the fucking movie. And something, you know, Sturges yeah. was a really interesting filmmaker, and comedy, I think, is the best way to talk about
yeah.
the society.
One, I think you're looking at, you know, we have an expression, Ed.
I don't like when you take this tone. I feel browbeaten already.
And a certain weekly anonymous support group I attend. Don't go to the hardware store for milk. You know,
I'll tell you,
don't go to your parents for that thing that they've never given you. Like, try it again. I don't think you're going to get that kind of storytelling in a movie theater these days. I just don't think that's what
is it because it's corporate funded?
I just think that we have a population that just wants to see Iron Man. You know, if Iron Man's not in your movie, it's hard to get funding for your money. But if there's a lot of great stuff on television. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I think that
deals with social stuff.
Yeah, I think it's coming. I mean, it's like people forget we've been shittier than we are now.
Meaning?
The Civil War.
Oh, that's know? Amazing.
We've been shittier than we are now.
But you know, but it's funny you bring up Civil War because this country is super polarized.
I think
the neo-Nazi marches.
It's funny because Khrushchev said.
Oh, I love that guy.
Khrushchev said that the Soviet Union would destroy the United States because capitalism would spend itself to death. And just because the Soviet Union and communism collapsed doesn't mean that capitalism is not going to spend itself to death. And what you have, I think, is corporations driven by the profit motive are slowly, it's more profitable and all these things that erode the pillars of our civilized society.
Yeah. Well, look,
all this polarization comes from profit motive. There's a two wins in making everything about people who love Hillary versus people who love Trump. And then you divide that country into those two groups. And then you divide the other two groups into, and this is also just human nature too. Read Lord of the Flies. You could retitle Lord of the Flies. The 2016 presidential election is basically what happened. A bunch of people, two camps that hate each other. And then in those two camps, you get the Trumpers and the never Trumpers and the Hillary and the Bernie people. It just subdivides down. It always subdivides yeah. down to the two groups that hate each other. But
it's been a nasty hate between the Bernies and the Hillarys.
Yeah.
You know,
it has
that's
been.
I've lost a few friends. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. And I'm not a fan of either. If Joe Biden runs
yeah.
and Bernie runs, I would vote for Joe Biden.
Really?
Yeah.
I would not. And the reason being, just for the reasons we're talking about, is let's just go back to the climate. You know, Exxon funding climate denial and climate. Mm-hmm. The Bidens of the world, they're in corp. You see, this is what's wrong with our capitalist system is that the politicians now, the mainstream politicians, and Biden is a great example. Like Biden will talk about his family. I mean, I love the way Joe Biden is one of these guys always talking about my father used to work in the coal mine. And meanwhile, he's a multimillionaire.
Sure.
And his campaigns and everybody who gets elected, they are funded by corporate money.
Right.
They are funded big time by corporate money. For the American political system to work, you have to get that out of.
Yeah.
You have to get that
out of
politics.
But I don't think that's how this is the argument that I present. Mm-hmm. You have the people who voted for Bernie Sanders that did not want to vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a
Wall Street mascot.
Right, right. So they go, no, I'm not going to vote for her. So instead you get mm-hmm. Donald Trump. Like
well, no.
They never imagined that Trump would win. They're like, well, I'll get
well, who?
It's like, Since when is voting for the lesser of two evils a new thing?
Right.
The reason that I don't vote for, I would be leery about supporting Bernie Sanders is I don't think he could win the general.
Right.
I don't think he could win the general.
Well, Hillary did not win the general.
Right.
And it's it wasn't because of people left.
No, she was
for instance, in California.
She had a ton of baggage. I think that Joe Biden would appeal to working class, disaffected Democrats in those Midwest states that wins you the election. And as Barack Obama said, the guy who gets the most votes gets to do what he wants to do. And I think between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, Joe Biden is the lesser of two evils.
Oh,
and I want the lesser of two evils. You know what happened in Kennedy versus Nixon? There's lesser of two evils. Neither one of them was
the greatest
leader of all time.
The disenfranchised people or the disenfranchised Democrats, disenfranchised working people, they saw Hillary, and this is how Trump won. They saw Hillary as part of the establishment, which she was. And this moron, Trump, you know what I recently read about him? And I forgot about this, that he made 9 appearances on the WWE.
Yeah.
So he became very good at wrestling terminology. Like he would say, Little Marco.
Yeah.
Like that was wrestling shit.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, there is such a swath of the American population, sorry if you're listening, that is so fucking stupid that they like when a guy is calling, you know, what do you call Cruz? Lion Teddy.
Yeah, it's all wrestling.
It's all wrestling shit.
Yeah.
And Hillary, lesser of two evils, but Hillary, I hate to say it, she wasn't, you know, she's definitely the lesser of two evils, but was not a woman of the people. I feel bad because, you know, it would have been
good. She was definitely not, you know, she was definitely at her own. And
she was taking,
you know, she lost, you know, she, for however she lost the election, I'm not saying she didn't lose the election, but what I'm saying is next time I want to win it. What I'm saying is I don't think Bernie would have won.
We don't know. And you know who has a huge part of the blame? I don't know if this is talked about enough, is the way the media covered the fucking election.
They gave Trump
wall-to-wall coverage.
Then
after he's elected, they're like, oh my God, look at this.
Yeah.
They gave him wall-to-wall coverage for ratings, and there's the corporate shit right there.
But is that
Bernie got dick?
But is that corporate shit, or is that just the nature of the beast? I mean, there's not
what's the beast?
Yeah, but there's not one guy that says, all right, everybody cover Trump. It's 2,000 people saying, all right, we're going to cover Trump.
Well, it's because the media is very concentrated in the hands of not 2,000 people. Do you know what I mean? The media is very concentrated.
I do.
MSNBC,
I think
CNN.
This is where I think Bernie does the same thing that Trump does.
Mm-hmm. What?
It's not your fault. It's their fault. When Trumpies points to Mexicans, it's not your fault. It's the Mexicans' fault.
And what does Bernie do?
It's not your fault. It's the banks. It's corporate America. And they're both
I think Bernie has a much better point.
But they're both amorphous things. There's no one corporate America. There's no one bank. You can't build a wall to keep Americans out, and you can't stop capitalism from having a profit motive. And I think
you can make capitalism more humane.
And I'm all for that. I'm all for that.
It's very inhumane.
No, agreed. And look, I'm not one of those people that thinks, you know, we need $1 trillion. What about just a couple billion?
Yeah.
And then you let it. But that goes to the nature of the Reaganomics, that they're still beating the drum on this thing. They can't even lie about it. It's called
trickle down.
Trickle down, right. And it's right there. People can't lie. You know, Jerry Sandusky, his book.
Is he alive still?
Yeah, he's in prison. You know what his book was called?
By the way,
his memoir? Do you know what the title of his memoir
is?
Touched. Before any
How do you
of this
make
happened.
That before
Touched. Yeah, he called it Touched.
I just remember his speeches in the locker room where he would be like, look, we are in a tough division. We need to rape everybody. He would make these speeches.
Look, we need to grease up and slide through their defenses. Lovingly but firmly.
So Theodore has his resurgence because of Letterman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Letterman starts putting him on the show.
Because he was known in the 60s and 70s. He was like a beatnik.
I had never heard of him.
Yeah.
I had never heard of him.
He was a pretty well-known beatnik poet.
Okay. He was, I believe, either a Holocaust survivor or a Germany escapee or right. something like that. He's one of those guys, a big shock of white hair. And he did what was called stand-up tragedy.
Stand-up tragedy, yeah.
That was his hook.
Yeah. He had the soul of Eddie Pepitone and the coif of Frank Conniff.
Yeah. He had this great thing. Yeah. So he had this very German, Austrian, angry delivery. And that was his
He's Adora really, Denzel.
Yeah, I can't even do the voice.
And I'll drop in a clip, but it was like, yeah, like he would go on a rant and let him right. go like, so do you want a mint? And then he would go, ha, 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 what an honor it is to share the stage with an intellectual colossus such as yourself.
Exactly right.
But I don't think he was joking.
No, I think he was. I think he knew that it was funny. I do. I really do. I think he knew it was funny. So we would do this show, and I would do my show after his. And his show was like sell out, and there'd be like three people that would come to my show. Oh, but we would like cross in the dressing room. There was like a little dressing room backstage. He goes, you know, he would always be like, make sure you clean up the dressing room when you're done. I don't care where you are. You must be a professional. Like that was like, I'm not even putting on makeup. No, I'm not doing anything to this dressing room.
Yeah.
And that was it. So we just.
Did you ever get into a friendly rapport with him when she saw that you
were not
Oscar
really.
Madison?
No. Not really. So it was just, he would go on and then like a half hour later, my show would start. Uh-huh. So I wish I had, but he was just too intimidating for me to talk to. Like, and
he would have,
and I don't think he had any, like, I mean, my show was like not a thing or anything like that.
Right.
Kind of figuring out.
Sure.
Like what to do.
We've all been there. That's a fascinating time. And that was Letterman's peak in the mid 80s. And a lot of great people came out of, you know, I think we got Bobcat out of that, Brother Theodore.
Oh, you mean out of
Letterman's show in the mid 80s, you know, it broke a lot of really great comedians.
No question. But now that I think it, this might have been before Letterman. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Might have been. Well, 81 is before Letterman. 81 was the morning show.
Yeah. You know, I went to the first morning show.
Really? Where Bob Sarlot was the announcer.
Yeah, here's my memory. This is the first, I know
in,
the date.
Was it
June 23rd, 1980. Went there, should have held on to the ticket, couldn't get it from the usher, had a hunch then, a collector's item. Here was the crazy thing. During the show, they did like a news break. Did you know this?
No.
And Edwin Newman, I hope I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, Edwin Newman.
So he goes, David's like, and now to do the, you know, today's headlines, there's something, Edwin Newman, and they cut to him and he's on the set. Just going to read some news, but the crowd just applauds. which freaks out Edwin Newman. He's like, okay, I don't even know what this is now. And then he just read the news dry. I just remember that was like
people
a weird,
clap.
Yeah.
Ray, President Reagan's been shot. No, this is not good. This is terrible.
This is not good. So, yes. No, yeah. So this is even before Reagan, right? 80 is still Carter.
Yeah, that's right. Reagan was sworn in January of 81. Yeah,
yeah. So anyway, I just remember that from the early, if anyone cares about the early Letterman show.
No, it's fascinating.
You do?
Yeah, of course. What's interesting is that people don't realize that he had a morning show on NBC and they were just trying to keep him on the reservation.
Because Carson loved him.
Carson loved him and they wanted, you know, so a lot of these people don't understand, like, you know, we had the show Seinfeld because Johnny Carson was going to retire one day. And NBC wanted to keep Jerry Seinfeld under contract playing in the yard in case they wanted him to replace Carson. And they kept giving him the show, The Seinfeld Chronicles, 4 half-hour episodes, a special. Just, give him a little bit of money and he'll do his thing, but we'll keep him
and
under contract.
And it was through the late night thing, right?
Yeah, it was a different department.
Yeah.
But it was just to lock him under contract. And I think it was they asked Jerry, and finally Jerry said he didn't want to replace Johnny, and they weren't sure about Letterman because he had bad relations. And then Shandling turned it down. You would know better than
I
would.
Yes, yeah.
And then Letterman, and then Leno, or it might have been other people. You know, I might be massacring that story.
But, no. That's pretty. That's pretty correct. Because I'm working right now on a documentary about Shandling.
The one with Judd, or
the one with Judd. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, there's competing
Shandling Dynamite.
The great.
And you're doing that with Radical Media. Is Radical Media your producer?
Yes.
Yeah, they produce Stand Against Evil.
They do?
I've seen your hard drives.
Oh, my God. Mm. How lucky is that your show, you get to work with a guy that you like that, right?
Yeah, true.
Don't you appreciate that?
I appreciate everything about my show. My show is a dream.
I love it.
Yeah.
But well, still, can't get you off the meds.
They're not connected. That's not connected in any way.
Okay.
I'm on meds because
this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Is that I can't believe
I'm on meds because I have a fear of erections.
I got you.
Enough said. So, yeah, go into this a little bit because you and Judd are both very, very close with Gary.
Yeah.
I didn't know Gary that well. I mean, I met him a handful of times.
Yeah, the reason I know Gary is through Judd.
Uh-huh.
And here's insane story.
And the reason Judd met Ben Stiller is through me, but who cares?
Oh, really? That was through the whole Big and Tall.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Am I right?
I was there. Where's my piece? Where's my cut of the pie, Apatow? I know you'll listen.
He does listen to podcasts. He's a pretty amazing consumer.
Oh, he's out there. He's out there. He knows who I am. He knows who I am.
This is crazy, but when I first came out to... My thing was I wasn't going to go to L.A. unless I had a SAG card. That was my...
Oh, I never heard that one.
Really?
Yeah.
That was my... Because I had so much trouble in New York getting an agent because I didn't have a SAG card.
I don't want to say Carol Burnett's had too many facelifts, but they took away your SAG card. Hallmark won't call me back. I'm sorry. So you come out, you're living in New York and you don't want to come to LA until you have a SAG.
Yeah, my goal was always to go to LA. I don't know. How about you?
Always.
Always. Okay, so we had the same thing.
From about the age of 13.
Okay, so a little similar, but you were in Boston, and then did you start doing stand-up there or no?
Yes, I started doing stand-up in Boston, then I went to UMass. And moved back to lived in Boston during the summers.
Isn't there also a school called Amherst near UMass Amherst?
Oh, yeah, but a vastly different school, a very expensive private school.
Would you ever hang out with those girls over there?
No, but I befriended John Michael Higgins, the actor who attended Amherst, and we've been friends since.
From those days?
From those days, we're still friends.
Isn't there like five schools?
Yes, five college systems. University of Massachusetts, Smith, Amherst, Mount Holyoke, and one other.
The fifth one.
And the fifth one. Yeah, there's another one up
Is
there.
Is it? I used to.
And there was a dirty rhyme, and it was like something, 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 but you can Mount Holyoke.
Did you? All right. So it was a very similar thing. So I always wanted to go to LA, but I didn't want to go without the SAG card just because I just felt like too big a wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got the SAG card.
You're a trained actor. You trained with Stella Adler.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're doing. You're not fucking around.
And again.
You're not here with your under five. You've done your homework.
I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I know about the group theater.
Yeah. You know how to hold a coffee cup that's not there.
Exactly. No Clifford Odets is.
It's coming. Here it comes. It's intermission time. Time to visit our concession stand.
Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. The design of Casper features a marriage between foam layers for ideal fitness, just the right sink, and just the right bounce. Oddly, two things you need for the success of a real marriage. You can get one at an affordable price because Casper sells direct to consumers with free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Try one out, risk-free, with a 100-night trial. There are 30 days in the average month. You get 100 nights, so that's 30 into 100. I don't have a calculator with me, but it's like 7 months. Look, if you're not happy, return it for free with no hassles. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Based on Casper, Amazon, and Google reviews. That's Casper, C-A-S-P-E-R. And best of all, it is designed, developed, and assembled right here in the U.S. of A. Here's a special offer for listeners of the Dana Gould Hour podcast. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana at checkout. Now, terms and conditions do apply. They wanted to waive them, but I said, no way. Not for this bunch. It started in the pivotal axis-spinning year of 1947. World War II had ended in 1945, and the world spent much of 1946 in tumult and shock. By 1947, the structure of the post-war world was beginning to take shape. America stood astride the globe, a military and economic colossus, unmatched in human history. But as we all saw in 2014's Godzilla, nature seeks a balance.
Nature has an order, a power to restore balance.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I said. And as a counterpoint to the dominance of the United States, the Soviet Union had lowered its Iron Curtain over Eastern Europe. It had been 2 years since the U.S. had dropped two atomic bombs over Japan, bringing the war in the Pacific to a final finish. And the U.S. was busy slowly amassing an atomic arsenal with enough firepower to destroy the world several times over. Why? Because the Soviet Union was 2 years away from an atomic arsenal of its own, thanks to their hiring up all the Nazi rocket scientists that the United States didn't get to first. And with two paranoid, neurotic superpowers staring each other down and flexing their collective muscles, the fate of humanity itself hung in the balance. A small group of scientists, a collection of atomic researchers, many of whom worked on the original Manhattan Project that designed the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, went on after the war to form a group called the Chicago Atomic Scientists. Now, yes, it is true. These same scientists then became the jazz rock band Chicago. No, that's a lie. But what they did do was begin publishing a newsletter called The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. And on the cover of every bulletin was the Doomsday Clock. The Doomsday Clock, an actual physical metric by which humankind could keep track of the likelihood of an Earth-ending global thermonuclear holocaust. The clock was set up like the face of an ordinary clock, with midnight symbolizing the destruction of the Earth caused by global thermonuclear activity. The likelihood or non-likelihood of such an event was measured by how many minutes away from midnight we actually were.
This is Groucho Marx. A few days ago, I was talking with the Director of Civil Defense, and he told me some things that I feel everyone should know. That's why I'm speaking to you now. Did you know, for example, that your chances of surviving an atom bomb attack are excellent?
Oh, my God.
It's true.
You maniacs! You blew it up! Oh, damn you!
Take a look around your house right now and pick out the safest spot, away from windows and doors.
God damn you all to hell!
I'm convinced that these precautions are necessary right now.
When the Doomsday Clock was first established, it was set at 7 minutes to midnight. And since then, it has been adjusted depending on how close we, as a species, come to wiping ourselves out. In 1953, when both the U.S. and the Soviet Union began atmospheric testing of hydrogen bombs, as a way of showing off, the clock was pushed ahead to 2 minutes to midnight. In 1991, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the clock was set back to 17 minutes to midnight. But then, in 2007, the parameters of the metric were expanded to include the effects of climate change. And by 2016, it had worked its way back up to 3 minutes to midnight. Add to that the global rise in strident nationalism, the threat of rogue states like North Korea, terrorist organizations, and the election of an emotionally unfit and competent president in the United States, the Doomsday Clock now sits at a snug, cozy 2.5 minutes to midnight.
God.
That said, global thermonuclear war or climate breakdown are not the only way humanity can snuff itself out. There are, in fact, lots of ways. And here are the big ones in order of likelihood. Climate change. Or as Eddie says, more realistically, climate breakdown. The long-term effects of climate breakdown manifest in the following ways. Normal weather conditions grow more severe and more intense, as witnessed in this year's hurricane season. The long-term effects result in some regions of the Earth that are currently livable being submerged underwater, other areas subject to increasing more severe droughts. This will then cause a trigger effect, a domino effect, of massive human and animal migration, which will change the distribution and intensity of communicable disease. Add to that the inherent political instability and the collapse of our ecosystem, and suddenly we find ourselves on a planet no longer viable for human and mammal life.
Gee, am I a stinker?
Two, asteroids. Yes, that's number two. Scientists believe quite strongly that it was a meteor impact that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs, and that it could happen again. In fact, it has. In 1908, an asteroid crashed into a forest in Siberia, leveling about 770 square miles. I believe it was called the Tunguska event. I might have mispronounced that. A bigger asteroid? Bigger problem. Others include a global pandemic, a fungal bacterial pandemic, or an engineered disease. That's right, a disease we made ourselves. In 2011, a group of scientists engineered a mutant version of the bird flu known as H5N1 that was transmissible in ferrets and through the air. Why? Great question.
You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you!
Right now, H5N1 is locked up in a lab somewhere. What could go wrong? There's also nuclear war, sentient killer robots, true, that's on the list, or more likely, overpopulation. Many scientists fear that unchecked population growth will soon overwhelm society's ability to feed, deliver medicine, and social and economic opportunity, leading to our society's slow descent into a lawless hellscape.
Greetings from the Humongous, the Lord Humongous, the warrior of the wasteland, the Ayatollah of rock and roller!
Most scientists fear the snowball effect. Instead of a big smasheroo, it's just a slow drip, drip, drip of all of these factors. As one said, not so much being eaten by a tiger, but more slowly being chewed to death by ducks. These scientists actually hold these beliefs. These are all true. But they're scientific beliefs. There are also religious beliefs. The vast, vast, vast majority of all the major religions include some version of an apocalyptic event. The rapture, the end times, whatever that thing is that makes Kirk Cameron's eyes all wide and shiny. This belief is so prevalent it has its own name, eschatology. The concept in theology that regardless of the course of human events, we have a final destiny. There is definitely a specific amount of sand in the hourglass, and when it runs out, it runs out. And so do we. Great story if it ends there right. Well, let's hope it doesn't. Look, maybe you want to ring in the Halloween season with a nice apocalyptic movie, like The Road Warrior, or Mad Max Fury Road, or The Omega Man, or Planet of the Apes, or the best apocalyptic book around that ain't a Bible, Richard Matheson's Titanic, I Am Legend. Oh, the list goes on and on and on and on. There's The Stand. Anyway, for these and other recommendations, visit the library page of danagould.com, where all of these items are featured with easy links. While you're there, you'll see options to donate to the show or subscribe through PayPal. Or PayPal. Subscribe through PayPal. And I'll find Paul. It'll be fine. Every cent goes back into the show, so please know we appreciate what, if anything, you can do. And that's not all. You can visit our store at comedyfilmnerds.com for Bevel Aqua Heating and Air Conditioning t-shirts, Dana Gould Hour t-shirts, signed vinyl copies of Funhouse, Let Me Put My Thoughts in You and I Know It's Wrong. And also on the website, you will see the link for my new digital download, Mr. Funny Man. There's also signed DVDs and CDs. There's all but just a bunch of stuff for your pre-apocalyptic entertainment storage facility.
It's a wide shot. There's lots of mist, and it comes into the hand on the door. Opens it up. It's Ron Jeremy with a pizza.
Hold that thought.
It's back.
Stand Against Evil. Brand new Wednesdays at 10. Starts November 1st on IFC.
Ice cream bars. It's the handy way to enjoy smooth, rich, creamy ice cream. Get some.
I eat popcorn. Everybody eats popcorn. She tastes real nice. Get yourself some now at our refreshment stand.
If you're talking about surviving the apocalypse, or any situation that is, shall we say, apocalypse adjacent, then you've got to talk about the Omega Man. The 1971 Charlton Heston Last Man on Earth sci-fi classic. Based on a novel by the great Richard Matheson called I Am Legend. Sound familiar? It was written in 1954 and tells the story of a plague of vampirism that wipes out all of humanity except for poor Robert Neville, who has to deal. I Am Legend is an excellent book. Such a great fun read. Actually, Stephen King cites it as a major influence, and really easy to see why when you read it. Highly recommended. From the Gould book bag to you, I Am Legend. Before it was made into the Omega Man, it was made into the 1964 Vincent Price schlocker The Last Man on Earth, which Richard Matheson actually wrote, but he didn't like the way it came out, so he changed his name in the credits to Logan Swanson, which I think sounds vaguely porny. Maybe that's just me. I think everything sounds vaguely porny. Butter cookies, French toast. I bet they all have different meanings on a porn set. I really like The Last Man on Earth. It looks a lot like Night of the Living Dead, but it predated that film by 4 years. The only problem with the film is that Vincent Price is the hero. He's the regular Joe that you're supposed to relate to, and that never quite comes off.
December 1965. Is that all it has been since I inherited the world? Only 3 years. It seems like 100 million.
Eventually, he meets a woman, but it turns out she is not all that she seems. Ain't that always the way? There's one really good part of the film at the very end where Vincent Price, facing down his army of attackers, gets off one great Vincent Price line.
You freaks! All of you. All of you freaks! I'm a man. The last.
The film did not do a ton of business. In fact, when The Omega Man went into pre-production only 7 years later, the producers had never even heard of it. But I guess the guy who owned the rights informed them. I guess they struck a deal. In Charlton Heston's book, The Actor's Life, which are his printed journals, his quote is, "Screen The Last Man on Earth today at Warner's. Nothing against Vinny, but it's not that much." My favorite scene in The Omega Man is right at the very beginning when Heston, standing alone in a big intersection in downtown Los Angeles, imagines that all the payphones start ringing.
There is no phone ringing, damn it!
There is no phone.
Nice and creepy. The vampires from I Am Legend have now become a band of technology-hating albino pyromaniacs, thus dispensing with the crosses and stakes and allowing Charlton to handle things in a more Hestonian manner.
Ah.
Something else is very different in The Omega Man from the other movie and from the book. The early 1970s was the heyday of blaxploitation cinema.
Up yours! Get out of the way!
Shaft's his name. Shaft's his game.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round. 'Cause she can really shake them down.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
And the producers of The Omega Man thought, wow, those blaxploitation films are making a lot of money. I'd like to make some of that money, too. And so, The Omega Man became the first post-apocalyptic blaxploitation kinda zombie movie.
And yet the whole family can't bring him down out of that... that...
hunky paradise, brother.
Forget the old ways, brother. All the old hatreds, all the old pains. Forget and remember, the family is one.
And then there's Rosalind Cash, the female lead in the film, coming across as a very Foxy Brown with her afro and leather-clad badassery. Off-screen, supposedly, she was somewhat intimidated by acting against Charlton Heston, who was, after all, Moses, but on-screen, she has no trouble at all.
Don't turn, just stand. When I want you to turn, I'll turn you on or off, up or around. I'll turn you. Now cool it.
My name's Robert.
Your name's Mud.
But they became friends.
You're sweet. It's okay, Tommy. This is the man, and I mean the man. But he's cool. It's okay.
Friends who kiss on the lips.
Now, what you thinking?
Well, you know the old song? If you were the only girl in the world and I were the only boy, okay, but till then, don't bother me. I guess I'm the only boy. You know, it's been a long, long time. I'm not sure I remember how this goes.
The Omega Man has one of the first interracial love scenes in a major motion picture, and it happened because Charlton Heston, right-wing, arch-conservative Charlton Heston, made it happen. I have to say, from a first-hand perspective, I did Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect, the show that he had on ABC before the HBO series. I did it with Charlton Heston back in the late 1990s, and I have to tell you, although we disagreed on just about everything, he could not have been a nicer guy. After the show, I told him how much I loved Planet of the Apes, and I'll never forget it. I said, you know, this might sound dorky, but when I was a kid, Planet of the Apes meant as much to me as baseball means to most kids. And I'll never forget it. He put both hands on my shoulders and he said, "This might be dorky too, but I'd be happy to send you a photo from the film if you'd like." And I wrote down my address and I handed it to him and he put it in his pocket and 4 days later showed up in the mail. And it is framed on my wall to this day and I still have the envelope. That is not the end of the Omega Man story. It was remade again in 2007 with Will Smith under the original title, I Am Legend, and I am willing to bet that the entire budget of The Omega Man probably came close to the latte budget on I Am Legend. But The Omega Man is the one that I love. One last little tidbit, and this is a spoiler alert if you've never seen the film. The fountain at the very end of the movie, into which Charlton Heston bleeds to death, is the very same fountain at the beginning of Friends. Both shot on the Warner Brothers Ranch in beautiful downtown Burbank.
Well, they sure don't make pictures like that anymore. Don't touch my bags if you
please. I'd like to thank HelloFresh.com for supporting this podcast. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. And I am speaking from experience. I am a single dad, and my older kids are somewhat brutal when it comes to reviews of my food preparation ability. My youngest daughter is young enough to still think that I'm cool. But with the arrival of HelloFresh in our lives, not only has dinner become a much better experience regarding our taste buds, But my older daughters and I prepare each meal together using the HelloFresh kit. And I'm quite serious when I tell you it's the best. We have a lot of fun. Dinner is great. And we all look forward to it. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions, because I'm no chef. Each recipe is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. They're set up so that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in a half an hour. Whether you usually cook for yourself or you're just not so comfortable making home-cooked meals, HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. And again, I'm telling you, I've seen this firsthand. Everything is delivered to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box, and it costs less than $10 a meal. I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code DGH30. DGH30. That's Dana Gould Hour 30, which is the age I try to tell people I still am. That's HelloFresh.com and use the code DGH30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. HelloFresh.com. Give them a shot.
And now, on with the show.
It's very difficult, especially when you go out on the road, because, you know, they talk about liberals being snowflakes.
Mm-hmm.
Trump supporters cannot stand criticism of Trump. They go bananas.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a guy throw a bottle of beer at me in Portland.
Oh, my God. In Portland?
Portland, Oregon, of all places. After a pretty mild joke. I mean, I wouldn't be that lazy.
Yeah.
To tell an obvious joke. And it's just like they just can't handle it. I go on the road usually at least once a week. Somebody walks out because they don't want to hear jokes about Trump. And I'm brief and pretty easy on them.
Yeah.
But they just can't handle it. But we're the snowflakes. The problem is it makes enemies of people in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And they are in your audience and they did pay to see a show and you are that show. And I feel that I have a duty to at least attempt to make them feel comfortable.
Right.
And to not drive them away. And I say, like, I'm going to tell some jokes about the pond. Be okay. Just breathe through it.
We'll get through it.
Yeah. I did jokes about, you know, I started off, I was very young. I had jokes about Reagan when I started. He was the president.
How old were you when you started?
17, 1982. It was fine.
Yeah.
People were fine.
Yeah.
You get through it. And the only way I sneak it in is fake praise. You know, I like that he's tough. And you know how you know he's tough? He never complains.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's just, that's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Because people go insane.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. And it's going to get much, much worse before it gets better. The amazing thing is, I really don't know what's going to happen.
No, that's what's the scariest part. Like, we're all kind of just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I was so stunned yesterday. Like, I didn't think I could be surprised anymore. And yesterday, I was flabbergasted.
Yeah. I had turned my phone off and I put it
away
for a while.
For those of you, yesterday was the day that he doubled down on. Look, Nazis, some of them are very fine people.
Some of them are fine.
They're not.
They had permits.
Historically, not fine people.
I was writing yesterday and I threw my phone in the other room and turned it on silent and whatever. And when I had come up for air, I checked my phone and it was just an explosion of like friends texting. You're never going to believe what he said now, like articles and like all this stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't even step away from it for like a couple hours. And it's just like madness. One of the jokes that I have is that I say, I'm like, I miss the days where we were all making fun of Canada.
Now
Canada's like the nerdy girl who grew up to be super hot. You know, it's like, we're basically like Canada, she's all that at us. You know what I mean? Like, well, now we're all like, oh, we could have had that. We could have had that. You look at somebody like Trudeau, who's the pinnacle, like, of just an amazing leader. He's attractive too, to boot. And he's just, he's the best. He's smart. He's charming. And then here we are. He's Trudeau, and we have an overcooked turducken. You know, it's the worst.
There's a lot of people that say, you know, the people who didn't vote for Trump, need to take the time to get to know and understand the people who did. And I say, actually, I think the people who did need to take some time and understand the people who didn't. Because there's more of us. There are 3 million more people that voted against him. And maybe they should find out why people really aren't
didn't want
this.
Him.
Yeah.
When I have conversations with my mom, is trying to just give her a laundry list of reasons why this is bad and he's a monster. And just even talking about the incident in Charlottesville.
Have you discussed that with your parents?
I haven't talked to my dad, but I've talked to my mom. And I was like, you know, the reason why everyone is so frustrated is because Trump won't come out and speak against, you know,
and it's two sides, honey. They're both very aggressive.
She didn't. She was kind of like, cause you know, my mom stills a bleeding heart a little bit. And she like,
if you watch Fox, that's like, well, Tucker Carlson said those, the all left it just.
I hate him so much.
No, it is amazing. I always think like there's so much about the world that I don't understand. Like somebody out there voluntarily fucks Tucker Carlson.
Do you think it's voluntary? I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I think he has a wife. He gets laid. So you don't understand the world.
She must be getting some sort of deal out of it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah. What does your mom go to on this?
All we talked about was just basically how sad it was. And I was like, the reason people are upset is because he's not speaking out against
Nazis
and anti-Semitism and just, you know, all right in general. And like basically he's endorsed by the KK, like, or the KKK, there's one more K vowel. But like just, it's so frustrating because she's like, it's so sad. It's so sad. And then of course, cause my mom, like she's a good person. She voted for Trump, but she's a good person. You know, she even said, she's like, we're all human underneath. I don't understand why it needs to be. I'm like, I know mom, like I know. But she can't break it down that those two things are it's all in the same problem where it's like, you can't think that all people are equal and then still vote for somebody like Trump because it's those are not the same thing.
Friendships have ended over this. Families don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what the founding fathers had in mind, but here's the thing. Nothing is surprising.
Yeah.
He is a textbook clinical malignant narcissist. Every relationship he's ever had, personally or business, you are in business with him. You are friends with him as long as you are useful to him. And then you are not, and you are cast aside.
Yep. You are disposed.
Right. This has never changed. And you leave nothing but wreckage in your path.
I mean, even just the course of who's coming in and out of the White House is a perfect example.
Like if you look at every business, like Atlantic City, the golf, it's all just wreckage and people burned. And this will be no different. When he's done, there will be nothing but wreckage and people burned. There's no other way this happens because otherwise it's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result, which is not going to happen.
It's basically like, you know, Obama had to come in with a dustpan and broom and clean up everything after the administration before him.
Right.
But it's like Obama accidentally left the dustpan on the floor and Trump just came in and just kicked the fucking thing and knocked it all over and made it even worse.
Yeah. A lot of people voted for Trump to disrupt the system, and then you'll find it, actually having the system work isn't the worst thing in the world. I like him because he's simple. He reminds me of me.
Oh, God.
You know?
I hope he doesn't.
But it's just like that.
Yeah.
I want a guy who's not a politician.
Yeah.
Really?
Do you?
Do you want a pilot that's not a pilot?
Yeah.
Do you want a surgeon that's not a surgeon? Who do you want doing your heart? The well-practiced surgeon? Or that regular guy reminds me of you. He'll just cut me open and look at what's wrong. He'll know because he works off his gut. Trickle
so people
down.
Can't
is like,
lie, you were saying.
What about trickle down? They call it trickle down. It's not flow down. It's not gurgle down. It's trickle.
Well,
you give us everything and then you might get a trickle. You know, like when somebody pisses on you, a trickle. That's what you'll get. They can't even lie about. There's.
And what boggles
the
my
chart of income disparity? The chart of income disparity
gotten worse
is
and
undeniable.
Worse,
but
which
but,
is why Bernie has a great message,
right? But here's the other thing that I worry about with Bernie, like with the people who thought that Donald Trump was going to come in and the wall was going to go up and there'd be no more Mexicans and gay people would go to the bathroom where I don't have to see them and all of these things that he promised on whatever day he was going to promise.
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
And Bernie says it too. It's time for a revolution. No, this system was designed to prevent that. Our system was designed in the 1700s to prevent concentrated power of one branch of government to affect radical
change. But
here's
now we start.
Which is why
about,
Trump is not doing all those things he said.
I got you.
He can't get it.
I got
done.
You. But the reason why, you know, it's time for a revolution resonates with me is the reason, you know, how we started the podcast. We're talking about tremendous climate breakdown.
Yeah.
And that is related to the system, capitalism.
I agree completely.
That is eating itself, or whatever you want to call it, right, spending itself to death with what Khrushchev said. That has to be changed before it's too late.
Right.
And a lot of scientists are saying it's too late already.
No, there's three things. I don't think those answers ever come from Washington. You know when that'll change? When they realize it's costing them too much money.
Yeah.
And that's when it'll change. You know, World War II. When do we get involved in World War II? When they finally attacked us.
Right.
You know, right. We knew what was going on.
Well, aren't these hurricanes attacks?
Yeah. No, I think that we are seeing the beginning of, and it will probably be when it was too late. You know, they're looking at, like, how do we redesign Miami so it can be like Venice? Because this is going to keep happening. And Miami is going to be, you know, Florida is one of those things, like, they don't know.
Now, we're talking about the flood aspect of it. Yeah. Also, and
the sea level.
And then here out west, the heat.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just talking before the podcast that, you know, we went through like 3 weeks, it seemed, here in LA of 100 degrees plus. That never relented.
Yeah.
LA's becoming Vegas. In Phoenix,
it was 120. It was 100. No, I was talking.
There were days it was 115 here.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody in Phoenix who did fry an egg on a piece of tin foil in their yard with their kids.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It won't be until
the wildfires
people start bursting into flames and they stop buying gas. And then Exxon, we got to do something about this. A dead customer is not a repeat customer. Look, civil rights legislation happened because black people demanded it. Mm-hmm. And it did happen in Washington. And I keep having to remind myself of this because I do get as exasperated as you do, that I think one of the biggest problems that people on the right have and that people on the far right and people on the far left have is the mistaken belief that leaders lead and they don't. They follow. And Trump came along at just the right time with just the right message for just the right people. It was a perfect... As Mike Murphy says,
a great manipulator.
He drew an inside straight in the Electoral College, and it was a perfect storm of angry people, a bad opposing candidate. You know, I don't like the idea of, like, I just want to blow up the system. Yeah, but then you're in this system that's blown up. It's like, I want to burn down my house. And then you have to go back and live there.
Yeah.
You know, it was a riot. It was an electoral riot. And it's like, you know, you look at the riots. What did we do? Burn down our neighborhood. Well, how'd that work out?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's, you know, what I look back and, like, I imagine those, like, childhood placemats of all the presidents.
Yes.
And now Trump is on it.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
You know, you get, like, all these amazing people. But this is like, and then Trump's on it. It's like, ugh.
There were some bad ones. I was reading about Harding.
Oh, yeah, Warren G. Harding.
He was Trump back then. I mean, the scandals were amazing.
But he didn't have any. So, I mean, he was just a tool of a machine. He was just, like, installed, basically, in the presidency.
Now, yeah, that's right. But
Trump is a dangerous dude, but but now the people are realizing that nothing works out the way you want. And he is a clinical narcissist, and he only cares about himself. And he wanted some legislative wins, and the Republicans weren't giving them to him.
Yeah,
so now he's making deals with the Democrats.
Right, right. Like, it is funny. All the bluster is replaced by, you know, now he's making deals with Democrats.
Because he's getting shit done, and he's getting good press.
He talks about North Korea will feel our wrath, and then he realizes, well, I can't just bomb North Korea because that'll involve China, Russia.
It's kind of beautiful. He doesn't believe in a fucking thing outside of himself. And it's interesting to see. And this love affair with the Democrats will last for two or three more days. But for right now, it's like, you know, he came to an agreement on DACA last night with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Yeah. And Breitbart posted amnesty done. Breitbart came out against him, but he's just like, I just want to win. I want people like me and I want stuff. It is one of those things that if you want something from him, flatter him and you'll get it.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
But this is the story I was going to tell you. There are always unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is what happened 2 weeks ago. We have, in between our two households, I have two dogs. My ex-wife has a little dog and my daughter has two cats. One of the cats, kind of my cat, Mr. Mustache. The somewhat famous Mr. Mustache. For Lulu's birthday, I got her a kitten at a shelter. And 2 weeks ago, I don't know how this happened. Mm-hmm. I was not there. No one knows. There was a horrible accident where the cat died by its own hand. Having kittens, it's like living with a suicide cult. You know, it's always like, you know, it's like, hey, those coyotes look hungry. Let me ask them what they like to eat. You know, RATPOI, don't care what's in here. I'm eating it. They've really got to, what does the dryer look like from the inside?
Is this curiosity killed the old? Yeah. They just do anything.
Yeah. And he died. And that was awful. The day he died, Mr. Mustache went out back and went under my house, and I always would get him.
Right.
And I literally was going to get him under the house. Got the call. You have to come down here right away because the kitten had died.
Yeah.
So I jump in my car and I ride down to the other house. I know Mr. Mustache will be fine because
he
does it before.
How long have you had Mr. Mustache?
A couple of years.
Okay.
I haven't seen him since.
You haven't seen Mustache?
No, he's gone.
Two cats in one day.
Two cats in one day. Then my ex-wife and I, we feel terrible and we want to get, Lulu wants a dog. So we go, all right, we should get her a dog because this is terrible. And we love animals. We have a lot of animals.
Yeah,
So Lou really wants a German Shepherd, but my ex-wife is like, no, I had a German Shepherd. I had a dachshund when I was a kid. I got attacked by a German Shepherd. It happened right in front of me. It was very traumatic. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get that kind of dog. But Lulu, we felt so bad about the kitten. Like, okay. So we went down to the German Shepherd rescue. We found this Siberian Husky that was great. And we had Sue's dog with us. Sue had a miniature poodle that she adored.
Right.
And the animals, they did the test to make sure that they were okay.
Yeah.
And they had a cat there to make sure it worked with the cat. Everything seemed great. Adopted the dog, brought it home. Within 24 hours, it had killed Sue's dog.
No.
I have to bring that dog.
It killed the miniature poodle?
Within 24 hours. And then I had to bring it back.
So that's three animals you lost within.
Four, because then I had to bring the husky back.
Four animals.
Because I have a cat in that house and the little children, and I don't trust this animal anymore. And,
of course, yeah.
And Lulu was hysterical and wanted to say goodbye to the dog. And I was like, I'm not going to let you scream and cry and hug a dog I don't trust. You know? So I had to take the dog out while she was going bananas and return it. And the dog's not going to get killed. It's not going to put down. It's in a rescue. It's going to find a home.
Dude, I don't know how I would have made it through that kind of slew of.
It was 1 week, four animals in 1 week.
That's intense.
And we were just like.
And tragic.
Yeah. No, we were by the time of the, and by the way, feel for my ex-wife.
Yeah.
It happened again. It's like, no, a German Shepherd attacked my dog when I was little. I don't want to get a German Shepherd. Please.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah. Guess what our next dog will not be? You know, it was just, but by the end of it, we were just punch drunk. What else? Sure. Okay. That's anything else?
Yeah.
Do I have dead cancer?
They always say, things can't get worse, but they can.
Yeah. No, it was.
Oh, fuck.
We were just like numb. By the end of it, we were just numb.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, you just go into shock. It was like so much. And again, like all of this, the law of unintended consequences, you know, all of these things, we had it planned out so well.
Right.
And nothing happened the way we thought it was going to happen because at the end of the day, you can't really control.
So I imagine after returning the Husky, you said, okay, enough.
We're done for a while. Yeah, we're done for a while. One of the weird things when Mila passed.
Your life, Dana.
That's weird.
Your life.
When Mila passed, she was a beatnik, you know, and she had a lot of beatnik connections in L.A. And a lot of these old 50s drag queens were friends of hers.
And how do beatniks stay in touch?
They don't. Bongos like Morse code.
Snapping. Inappropriately. Wait, at the beret store?
At the beret store.
Me and
my adult female social companion were watching Peter Gunn last night.
The TV show.
Yeah, we went down to Peter Gunn rabbit hole.
The song by Henry Mancini.
By Hank Mank, yeah.
From Aliquippa, Pennsylvania.
I did not know that. Yeah, well, and all the scripts written by Blake Edwards, pretty much.
And that's how they... Got together, right?
Yeah. But what's amazing is like, so much of the show is set in like jazz coffee shops and picnic bars, and we were so enamored of the patois, and
that sounds like a good match for you. Great. If you could go do that.
Peter Gunn's girlfriend answers the phone like this: "Bring, bring." Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start doing that.
Like, hey, you know, Susan Jones is dead. I dig you, Pete. I scoped it. I was down to Lido's place and they were laying down some crazy sounds. You know, it's like, it's so beboppy. It's great. We both agreed that we like that much more than the hippie era.
You're right.
When it was kind of still, you dress nice and you dress cool. And,
right. Did you ever see a show called Mr. Lucky?
No, but I have the soundtrack.
Right.
Also by Hank.
Yeah. That's how I guess I know it is, through that music, I assume.
Right.
Yeah.
So we digressed. You come to L.A.
I come to L.A. SAG card. I'm like, on just like a fact finding. Like, let's see how this is all going to work out. Go to the first club I stop by is the Laugh Factory because that's the closest one. I'm staying in the Valley.
Because you can always get factory work.
Exactly. Punch in 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Who is the first person I meet outside the Laugh Factory? Your buddy, Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow?
Who is a freshman.
Yeah.
Who's just starting at USC.
What year is this now?
This is, I believe it's 85.
Yeah.
Because before I even moved out.
I met him right after he graduated. I met him in 89 or 90.
He never graduated, so he's lying to me.
Okay. Well, no, I mean later. I mean,
After he was done. Yeah. So this is the first person I meet. So, like, all, you know, it's like, thank God I'm nice to this kid.
Yeah.
And
he was a nice kid.
He was. He was very. He was. Yeah. He knew who I was. Like, that's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. That is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. So then later when I auditioned, I think I first auditioned for Larry Sanders, didn't get it, and then auditioned again. And in that time, Judd brought me to the basketball game.
Gary Shandling basketball game.
Yeah, and then I was there for throughout. I was actually, without bragging, the commissioner of that game.
Where you played basketball with my manager, Tom LaSalle.
Yes.
Whose father, Peter LaSalle.
That's your manager?
I was with him this morning.
I just saw him a couple days ago.
Yeah. He has a beard now.
Yes.
He grew one and I shaved mine. That's how we do things.
That's how you do it.
That's how we do things.
Lovely man.
Oh, he's the greatest. Gave me the best advice I've ever gotten in show business.
Is there any way you can share it or
I can tell it to you right now.
Right now.
I can tell it to everybody.
This is the greatest advice. You don't want to keep it to yourself.
No, I share it. I don't hoard it. I'm the Grateful Dead. I give tape my show for free.
I see. And but he's still charged for the CDs and the albums, right?
Yeah. Three pieces of great advice I've gotten in my career. One about show business in general. Two about stand-up comedy specifically.
I love it. I can't wait.
The first two I got on the same night. From Kevin Rooney in a little city called Dallas, Texas.
Right.
We're performing at the Improv. And I was an angry young man, Wayne. I don't know if you remember.
I don't actually don't remember you being angry.
I was angry on stage.
Well, I just remember you being more goofy and super creative. And also,
medication.
This is a digress. No, but that you were one of the first, like, really very confessional comedians about.
Yeah.
Right.
Blame that on me for sure. Yes.
Well, I mean, Richard Pryor was confessional in a way, but in a, like, an inner way.
Yeah. No, yeah. I was the, yeah, I was, and I can tell you the origin of that, but it's
enough. Okay. I'm just, so I never thought it was like, oh, that he's, cause I know angry comedians. And yeah. I never thought you were that.
I had a hard time relating to the crowd. And Kevin,
the one Rooney, thing you're supposed to
do. That's exactly right.
The job description.
Kevin Rooney solved that problem, and I was a better comedian the next show.
Oh, I can't wait to hear
this. He said, first thing,
yeah,
it's a show.
Okay.
It's a show.
Yeah.
These people paid, most of them got babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
They paid to come here. They paid to get in. It's a show. They paid money. They want to have a good time. And they're in your corner. And the second thing was, the audience wants to like you, but they're waiting to see if you like them.
Oh, that's a good one.
And that, I was a better comic the next show.
Ah.
The next show. And what Tom said to me was, put yourself in the position where you are the person that hires you.
Right. That's almost like in the same in relationships.
I
feel like be the person that you would want to be
with. I see. No, he meant literally. If you want to act, be a producer of a show and hire yourself to act.
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely misunderstood that. Say it again. Because I'm
put yourself affected. In the position where you are the person that hires you.
Oh, so not like mentally in the position, no, but actually
in the physical position. And I did it.
An idiot.
Stand Against Evil, my show is the perfect example of that.
Right.
I wrote a show, I'm the boss, and I hired myself to write scripts and act in it.
Right. How do you get along with him? How do you get along with Dana?
He's a fucking asshole. And when he's medicated, he's great.
You can handle him.
Yeah. But he's medicated, he's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. When he's medicated, he's good. No, but it's really true. It's just, and I tell that to comedian stuff, like when I act, it's like, great, learn to write a script.
Yeah.
You know, get it produced, act in it. And a lot of big stars, a lot of their movies that they're in are because they're producers and they find material
for
themselves.
I know. You will, okay, can we just dive into this a little bit? Because you will admit there's a certain kind of like, I have to do this myself, as opposed to people would love to see me. Love me. And
I know people. We have friends in common that are still impatiently waiting for their success to be delivered like a pizza.
Right. But that does happen.
Yes. And people win the lottery, but you can't plan on winning the lottery.
Okay.
Otherwise, you've got a sweet smell of success. I'm pretty sure Burt Lancaster
developed that, or
Tony Curtis developed it for themselves.
Probably right. And you're never punished for that once it's out there.
No, the best example is Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas was a comedian.
Yes, very funny comic for years.
His son was a comic.
Yeah. I worked with him at the Valley Improv.
There you go.
I mean, the Valley Improv and the Santa Monica Improv.
Wow. That's like saying the Bronze Age and the Java Age. Michael Douglas was a TV actor. He was on Streets of San Francisco. And what,
you know, Carl Malden.
And what happened was his dad years ago had bought his dad, Kirk Douglas, the giant movie star of Spartacus.
Right.
His dad had bought the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the novel by Ken Kesey. And it was also a Broadway play. And he was having a hard time getting it going. And Michael Douglas was on Streets of San Francisco. And he gets hey, can I take a crack at this? Can I try to get it going? And he's like, yeah, I can't do anything with it. So Michael Douglas now gets the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And he sets it up. And he meets Milos Forman. And they package it. And they get it going. And it gets to the point where they're going to make this as a movie. Mm-hmm. But by the time they've got it to that point, this takes a couple of years, Kirk Douglas is too old to play the lead.
Oh, he wanted to play.
Yeah, why Kirk Douglas bought it as a vehicle for himself. He couldn't get it going.
McMurphy.
Yeah, he couldn't get it going.
Yeah.
So he said it to Michael, all right, you try to get it going. And then Douglas had to go to his dad and say, good news, bad news. The movie's going.
No green lights.
You're not in it.
Red light for you.
Yeah. We're Jack Nicholson's going to play.
We're doing great over here.
Yeah.
Stay over here.
Yeah. And they win the Academy Award.
Of course, 1975.
And now Michael Douglas is one of the hottest producers in town. But nobody cares about him as an actor. But he wants to be an actor.
So?
I believe the next movie project he bought was The China Syndrome. And he produced it. And gave himself a role in it and just forced himself into the movie.
Oh, I see.
And established
himself. And actually very good. He's the cameraman, right?
Yeah, he establishes himself as a movie star. It might have been a different movie, but I think it was The China Syndrome. But he basically, you know, I always say like, yeah, I could have a TV show. I have to learn how to build a camera, to fund a network. I have to like build a satellite. No one will help me with anything. But I'm become, you know, if I've learned anything in my 30-odd years in the business,
right.
I think I've qualified at having at least an opinion that should be listed. I have some experience.
No question.
You know, everything, by and large, everything I've gotten out of show business, I have clawed out of its face. Or I had an opportunity that came.
That's not true.
I had an opportunity that came about because people knew me from other times I was trying to claw something out of somebody's face.
But I remember, just from my perspective, I remember you doing like an HBO, like half hour, pretty early on, right?
Yeah. But that was, I worked for those. Like, nobody gave me those. Like, I worked for those, but I never like, and I made pilots and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, I never got the cushy, as I've said, you know, in the heyday of giving comedians pilots, I had my hand in more failed pilots than an Air Force proctologist. You're out in LA now.
Yeah.
You've been here for 9 years. Yeah. You've been doing stand-up for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. What does Valerie Tosi want to do?
Oh, what does she want to do?
What
so
do you,
many
you
things.
See what do you see your life in 10 years?
I'm doing a lot more writing. I eventually want to be in charge of having my own show. Is something that I am would love to do. I would love to star in it, but I also want to kind of be on the production side of things as well. Doing this all-woman show, I want to take it on the road and do a tour with it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which I'm trying to figure out right now because I feel like there's so many female comics in different markets that don't get
enough
any
stage
exposure.
Time.
Yeah. And so what I want to do is kind of do a hybrid where I take some people from here on the road and then we book shows with other women in other cities. Cause I did so many festivals last year and met so many of them where it's kind of like a hybrid where you get people that are local, but you also get people that are coming in from LA or New York too. Mm-hmm.
And then you're a job creator.
Yeah. And then everyone's hitting you up and you're like, oh,
this is what
power.
It's like.
And I'm also disgustingly organized too. So I kind of have that mindset to already be kind of in charge of stuff. Color coding is like porn for me. It's sad. It's so sad. But like I'm already all set to do my taxes and it's August.
Yeah. Well, if you look on that table, you'll see a label maker.
Oh, see, look at that.
Yeah. I'm very organized.
I mean, your
because
house is clean.
So much, thank you. And yeah. It's no easy task with 3 kids. I also have I think for a lot of people, you have so much chaos in your head.
Mm-hmm.
That I need my physical space organized.
Yep.
I can't coexist the other way.
It drives me insane.
Yeah. And I grew up in chaos and I won't have it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. Just always chaos. Like, I just think about growing up in that house and how it's like, how did I make it this far? Like,
uh-huh.
You know, it's.
Yeah. How do we not die?
I don't know. We used to joke that our family was like the Simpsons on crack. That it was like even worse than that, like what you watch there. It's just nutty. Cause our parents, like my family is, it's like they're cartoons. They're like not real people, especially my dad. I mean, you saw a picture of him. Yeah. He's like got this crazy Tom Selleck mustache yeah. and like Coke bottle glasses. He is
He's
a asshole.
Perfect asshole. Like every member of my family.
My mom and her friend came out for my 30th birthday to visit a couple years ago. And it was just hilarious because she's from Florida, but originally from Mass. So you've got those two together. Oh yeah, the eye roll. You might have heard it through the.
It was just Florida and Mass, just fucking, like that combo.
Why? But they came out and it's just so funny because we took them out for sushi. My mom will not eat sushi, so there had to be other stuff. God forbid. Is it battered and fried? Then I don't want it. Her friend was out and she's like, "Yeah, the sushi's fine, but it's not as good as Florida." Oh, is it? Is it not as good as really? Okay. But it's just that mindset is
yeah.
so funny.
Years ago, my mom and my sister came out and I took them to that, whatever that arty farty fancy ass restaurant is in Malibu.
I know what you're talking about though. Yeah.
And we're on the, and my sister just literally orders the 3 most expensive things on the menu. Like doesn't even look.
No.
Like
no.
orders an Alaska King crab. And like something
oh my
else.
God.
Like, in the last case, she doesn't even know how to eat it.
No, of course not.
No, she just stares at it. And it was just like literally just like she ordered $300 worth of shit because she could and didn't know how to eat it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because I go home and I think, I'm like, how did I eat this way growing up and not die?
Mm-hmm.
Like of a heart attack at age 13.
Yeah. My mom was from Virginia and we, twice a week we would eat chicken fried in bacon grease. Delicious. But like my arteries,
I know
my arteries hurt just talking about it.
One of the things my parents do, cause they're Italian on both sides and they make their own sauce and it's amazing. But one of the things that they do for flavor, but it's like weirdly gross when you think about it, is when they're frying up all the meatballs, one of the secrets to the sauce that they do is that they take, tomato paste
mm-hmm.
and they'll throw it into the frying pan after they're done frying all the meatballs to soak up all the grease mm-hmm. and then put that into the sauce. Did we need that? You know what I mean? Like, does that, you couldn't have let, no.
Have you ever had a porchetta?
No. What's
oh
that?
Yeah. It's like a pork loin roast wrapped in fennel and cooked in this giant, it's just
oh.
like, it's like a heart attack machine.
Is it bad that my first thought was that sounds good?
No, it's really good.
You my dad, to break that habit.
Yeah, my dad will make it for you. He's very good.
Ooh.
Yeah, you tie it off and then there's this giant, like thick hide that it gets like bacon, but it's like an inch and a half thick.
My question for that is though, does he make it shirtless?
Yeah. My dad, do you know Fred Savage is?
Yeah.
So I was on a TV series of Fred Savage called Working. And then after the show wrapped, Fred went down to and did a play on Cape Cod for the summer. And my parents were living on Cape Cod at the time. So I said, you should go see my dad. And he met my dad once because my dad came up to visit when we were on the set. And he's obsessed with my father because my dad's like your dad. Just
you know that your father and I would get along like gangbusters.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally. So Fred goes to visit my parents with a friend of his. Middle of August, my dad, no shirt, comes in. He makes them a shepherd's pie.
Oh my God.
In the middle of August.
I was going to say, you made that in August.
Yeah, because, I got to make you a shepherd's pie.
Oh my God.
Sit down, Freddie. Have a drink.
That is a freak, though. We're already talking
about what we're going to get,
right?
And when we're going to get it. I mean, we right. really love animals. And as you can right. tell, I mean, even though we're not married and we live apart, mm-hmm. we're still very much a functioning family unit. This mm-hmm. not a.
This is why my wife wants to get a. This is why I also. My wife loves animals, but lately she's just felt distant and she wants to get a robot.
I would love a fucking robot.
I am like, I don't know.
But you know, we had the robot 24 hours and it subverted our culture and now we're slaves.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, she's constantly reading H.G. Wells. She's constantly reading Jules Verne to me out loud when I'm asleep. I found this out because I found this out because I have a science fiction camp. Some people have a nanny camp.
You have a sci-fi camp?
I have a sci-fi camp. Uh-huh. Whenever I am read science fiction by my wife out loud, it clicks on. Like, you know, it hears Philip K. Dick and the red light goes on. She doesn't see it because I have it hidden in a teddy bear. Yeah. I have the science fiction.
Well, by the way, why the K? Your name is Philip. Your name is Philip Dick. It's a good memorable name.
Boy, he went downhill quickly. Philip K. Dick. I think he was.
He ended rough. A lot of these guys end rough.
The what?
They end rough.
Sci-fi guys?
Yeah.
Or just writers?
The smart one was Hubbard.
Oh my God.
Harlan Ellison used to play cards with L. Ron Hubbard, and he would say, Harlan would say, like, you know, the big money in this country is a religion. Somebody's going to invent a religion and make $1 billion. Like,
and Hubbard just.
It was you.
Jesus.
And what's amazing to me, do you watch the Leah Remini show about Scientology?
No, I haven't, and like her.
It's fucking amazing.
It is, huh?
And what's
she really gets into it. Now, how does she avoid their wrath? Because what I heard about them is that they go after people.
They do go after people. And here's what I want to know also. Mm-hmm. I think her whole thing started with David Miscavige, who runs Scientology.
Oh, okay.
Now, his wife is like in a Scientology punishment camp in Florida, and nobody has seen or heard from her in like 2 years. And she was friends with Leah Remini, and I'm wondering if she was the first person reported missing during the hurricane. David Miscavige. Oh yeah, she drowned. I can't find her. She's gone. I wonder how many people in those situations take the opportunity to disappear themselves.
Oh yeah,
that was a Neil LaBute play about a guy in New York after 9/11 that just
Neil
like
LaBute.
It's like, I'm dead. I'm gonna start over.
That happened a few. Yeah, that happened. Right?
I can see why it happened. It was also, oddly, the Perry Mason I saw last.
It would be funny if people, if they're...
How can you die and still be sitting here? My God.
Was that right?
Your eyes are beautiful. Raymond.
It would be funny if people actually took little incidents to disappear, like the subway stops between stations and there's a guy going, I can make use of this. There'll be a 5 minute delay. There's another train coming. He disappears himself.
In all the hubbub of the opening of the Emoji Movie, I decided.
Where's Nick? Well, there was a crush to get in, but where is he? He just becomes Ted Leon but unfortunately he picked Barbuda Island, which got blown off the face of the earth.
The first thing you need when you start your new life is everyone has immediately a stick-on mustache. That's the first thing that happens. Get that mustache on. Okay, good. I feel better.
Oh my God. But inventing a religion, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about with all these guys just, and it's a big component of our society now. Like you even referenced a little bit that everybody wants to watch Iron Man now. Reality, when it becomes harsh, and there's a lot of harsh reality for a lot of people in this country right now, just joblessness.
Because they're weak, let's just say.
But they want to escape into La La Land. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing about Scientology. Now, I never, this was a good thing for, I gotta bless my parents for this. They never brought me up with any religion, which I think was a really good thing for me because I just hear like the levels of Scientology.
Sure, yeah, they're
and I'm like, what the fuck? Who believe? How could? Yeah, I that's mean, the yeah. level of despair. I think the level of despair you have to be in to believe in some of these fantasies is
yeah, just it's maddening. Incredible. The really interesting thing in the one of the many interesting things in that Leah Remini doc show as a show. She goes, they're always talking about how if you follow the steps,
yes,
you will be self-actualized. You will rid yourself of the invisible robots that are foaming out of your pores and you'll become, and at the end of the day,
invisible
it's always.
Invisible rope.
Yep. You're covered in small invisible robots.
For real?
Yep. And then from Xenu, jeez, the galactic ruler. But at the end, and the end of the, this is all real. This is, all, it's like, just YouTube the South Park. Like South Park animated what they really believe, and they had to put a Chiron at the bottom. Like
those guys
no,
are funny. Even this though there's something I don't like about
no,
them.
No, this is what they believe. Like they had to Chiron it. This is not bullshit. This is exactly what they believe. And she goes, but if you look in the parking lot when they give all these big speeches about if you come to Scientology, you'll be everybody in Scientology is driving a fucking junker. Like David Miscavige is in a fleet of limousines, and all the people there, they're all in shitty old used cars. Banged up cars.
Yeah.
Because they give all their money.
The money's not trickling down. No, it's not trickling
it's
down.
It's a pyramid scheme like anything else.
So
but how do people still do it? That's what Phil Hendry, I talked about Phil Hendry.
Is he still doing
he's on as a podcast. I think he's on the radio, but definitely online. And he's a genius. And towards the end, for those of you unfamiliar with Phil Hendry, he's a famous DJ, radio personality here in Los Angeles, who had a call-in radio show where he would play his own guests.
Okay.
And he was quite.
I want to do something like that. I like so, that. It's a little exhausting.
He is a genius. I saw him do it once.
Is it archived?
Yeah. And it's all. HENDRIE. Yeah. Online. It's brilliant. He interviewed me and it was me. And then a call came in. So it was Phil interviewing me and playing the woman that called in and the woman's husband off the phone. So it was like,
I like
tell,
that.
Tell him the thing about the baseball game.
I don't want to tell him the baseball thing. Bobby, we're trying to interview Dana Gould. Tell him the thing about the baseball game. He's talking to a comedian. Sorry, Dana. Like, it was
I love
brilliant.
That shit, by
it's
the
brilliant.
Way. I do an Alan Margaret thing, just an old couple that live in my head. Love that because it's very freeing, but it can be exhausting too.
It's exhausting and it reminds me of the way he writes in his mind. Reminds me of like National Lampoon at its peak.
Yeah.
Like it's really sharp and a stiletto blade and
that's
funny
the kind of
dark.
Comedy by the way that I say where is that now that kind it's, of comedy it's, no it's, I'm being serious
it's at this table
no do you know what I mean
we're like, the only ones
it ain't at SNL you know what I mean
nope no and it's rarely in whatever is the most you know and it wasn't and during the Nixon administration it wasn't on the Carol Burnett show
but that was a more prosperous time and I liked when she pulled her ear I loved when she pulled her and Harvey Korman
do you know why she pulled her ear
I forget the reason, but yeah, what is it again?
It
she was saying
her,
hello to her aunt.
It made her come.
Folks, that was a misdirection. Dana Gould.
You like how I did that?
I love that.
Dead serious?
Yes. It's great. I bought it.
Did you ever have a development deal?
I had 40 development deals.
40?
Yeah, I had so many fucking development deals. I made so much money back then. Like, I had to get my bite rebuilt in 1992. I had a development deal, parked $35,000 in my mouth in dentistry. I had,
really?
I bought a car the next year. And I've had so I had Dana with Jace Richdale. I had Nice Try with Linwood Boomer. I had all these pilots. Then I finally wrote one myself because let me do it. And that actually got made. That was called World on a String that I co-produced with Jay Kogan. And that was when I realized.
By the way, for the first year I knew him, thought his name was Jay Kogan. Jay Kogan.
It is.
No, I'm sorry.
I thought it was Jake Hogan.
I thought it was Jake Hogan.
Everybody thought it was Jake Hogan.
Yeah, I thought it was Jake Hogan. I said that backwards.
Yeah.
That was stupid.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, the great Jake Hogan, great guy. I believe he and Wally invented Kang and Kodos on The Simpsons.
Wow.
Gotta say, not played by real aliens. Cultural appropriation.
The mind of Dana Gould. I love it. It's very entertaining.
Grinding. It's very entertaining. Back to you. Gary Shandling. You end up getting cast in the Larry Sanders Show, playing his brother.
And later I found out.
And that came from the basketball game?
I think it was a combination. I do think that helped.
Oh, of course.
I do think that helped. Because the first time I auditioned, for a Jewish guy on his show.
Was that the name of the character?
Yeah. Well, it was like, it was an episode about Hank wanting to embrace his Judaism or Judaism. So like, and I didn't get that. So it worked out. It worked. No, I do think that helped.
Sure.
100%. 100%. And then
I got on Seinfeld because I'm pretty sure it was because I was friends with Jeff and Alec.
Oh, really?
It's like Jeff's girlfriend lived with my girlfriend and I saw him every day. It was like, and I came in, it was basically, if you don't shit your pants, you'll probably get this. Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal show to be on, right?
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I still get recognized from that. I'm sure you get.
A little, but not Seinfeld. The Larry Sanders Show doesn't have the reach that Seinfeld does.
No, yeah.
Seinfeld's on every day.
I get
it's like Lucy. Lucy.
Yeah, it is. I got recognized in the ocean in Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah.
Underwater.
I was in the water with my, and somebody swam by me and said, if this van's rocking, don't come knocking. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then my wife at the time went, oh, that's from Seinfeld. It's like, wow. He recognized me wet.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's the kind of
research. So no, and then Gary, for some reason, Dana, to this day, I'm baffled by it, just took a liking to me and was very supportive.
Do you think that's what killed him?
Well, obviously there's something mentally wrong with him. Right. Something, there was a break, obviously. Yeah. It was like, oh, Wayne Fetterman.
Of course he liked you. Here's two reasons. You're funny.
Thanks.
And you're very self-aware and self-possessed, and you never get the feeling that you want anything from anybody else. Like,
right.
I'm sure he deeply appreciated it. Hey, Gary.
Right.
And I know there have been people that go through that game that were like,
yeah.
They're politically not there to play basketball.
Right. And I think he knew that I was just like there to play basketball. And it was fun. And then I later found out that he had a brother who died as a kid.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know that.
Yeah. In fact, that's almost the through line of this documentary we're doing of his relationship with this older brother. That's why he's from Arizona, because they had a brother who had cystic fibrosis.
Oh.
He's from Chicago. He was born in Chicago.
I had no
idea. You remember those times when they were like, well, go to a warm, dry climate.
Yeah.
That was medication back then.
Wow. It was cystic fibrosis, not
I believe it was cystic fibrosis. Yeah. So
they used to send people with tuberculosis down there too.
It was. I remember it was just like you got to be in a dry climate. So I guess a lot of like sickly Jews in Tucson.
Right. Okay. So,
that's how he got to Arizona.
He carries himself. Well, he did. Like he's just kind of. You don't expect Gary from Arizona. Like
right.
You don't expect to go into Gary Schelling's house and see a lot of Indian blankets.
No, I know.
But they're all there.
No question. It was a great dichotomy. So anyway, it was just a great joy that I got to be part of that game and just hang out with him, and that he would take me to premieres. I was like I was literally his plus one for many years. I was just like, wow, this is
That must be amazing. That must be amazing. Yeah,
that was fun.
You know, and you get the inside dirt on everybody.
Here's the thing you should know about me. I'm not really an inside dirt guy.
Well, Gary wasn't a dishy dude either.
I always felt like gossip is like, I mean, with the exception of if you know anything about Clifford Odets, I'd love to hear it.
But it's something that if he was alive, he could sue you for.
Right.
Do you have anything? Clifford Odets could sue you for? Yes, I happen to.
In that realm.
So through, and this is one of those, you know, great, like, and through your friendship with Gary Shandling, you become friends with David Duchovny.
Right. Duchovny saw me on Larry Sanders' show.
Uh-huh.
And then I think saw me maybe.
Wasn't he at the game a lot?
He was starting to go to the game. Yeah, he was at the game too, but he was also doing the X. So they were in Canada at the time.
Right.
So we never saw him. And and that's how I believe was part of the reason. And he's also, you know, he's a big stand-up nerd.
Yes, I do know. I know him. Yeah.
Yeah. So he knew me from stand-up and he was like, I'm going to have you play Wayne Fetterman.
That's what's amazing.
He wrote it with me in mind, sent me the draft. And this is just in my memory of this, Dana, is it came through my fax machine, which, by the way, I had the kind of fax machine that had the roll.
Sure,
paper.
I did too. Brother? Right. You had a brother fax machine?
Yeah. You would never.
You know where my fax machine is right now?
Tell me.
It is in, oh shit, I'm blanking on his name.
Lauren Michaels?
No, it's in Russ Tamblyn's garage.
Okay.
It is.
I do kind of want to hear the story. Boy, that'd be like it's better than mine.
It's in Russ Tamblyn's garage. I didn't want a fax machine anymore. I had a Brother 300 fax machine.
Yeah.
I put an ad in the Recycler, which was the, before the Craigslist. It was Craigslist. It was a newspaper called Recycler.
$1.
$1. And I got
free to put the ad in, $1 to buy it, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that the way it worked?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was cheap. And then I got a call on my answering machine tape. If you haven't sold the fax machine, I'd be interested in buying it. I was like, great. Yeah. Which I forget. It was like $60 or something. It was like a $200 fax machine. It still worked fine. I just didn't use it. And he goes, yeah, great. My name's Russ. I live over in Venice. I'm like, all right, I'll just drive it over. Tuesday night, good. Terrific. And I go down there and knock on the door, and there's Russ Tamblyn. I go, yeah, I know who you are. You're Russ Tamblyn. She goes, yeah. And I was Twin Peaks had only been over like 2 years.
Right.
I came in, and I was just like, you're Dr. Jacoby. And he goes, ha, ha, yeah. So he goes, come on in. So I go in. I give him the fax machine. I was like, I'm not taking your money. I love War of the Gargantuas. I'm not taking your money.
The movies.
Yeah, so he thought that was like the funniest thing he'd ever heard. He gave me, and I still have it, my Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department coffee cup.
Okay.
And so, and then he was lovely, and we left. So cut to last year, whatever, 20-odd years later, I'm talking to my friend David Cross, who is married to Russ's daughter, Amber.
Right.
And I tell that story, and Amber goes, he still has that thing. It's in our garage. He won't get rid of it.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Before I finish this, I just want to say, I do remember a joke of yours about...
Good. I need anything I can...
No. Hear. It was just a beautiful joke about... going to heaven or time spent on eBay.
Yeah. That was a good joke.
What was that? How did that go?
Was like it just
triggered it.
Yeah, that when you die, before you get into heaven, you have to stand in front of all the children who starved to death while you were alive on earth and read them your eBay purchases.
And one of them was like so like a...
I bought it for $2.95. I bought a Hot Wheels carrying case. It was the orange case. I bought a Mars Attacks coffee cup.
But wasn't there one like from the party or something like that, or for, like the crew only jacket?
Yeah, it was a crew only. It was a crew.
What was the joke?
I believe it was a Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me crew jacket. That's, I didn't give it out to anybody.
Right.
I didn't give it out to just
that
anybody.
That precise thing was beautiful. Beautiful. Sorry to do.
No. That's that one. And the fun one was like I have a Hot Wheels carrying case. I don't even use it. I think I put rubber bands in it. I don't know. 50 cents would have fed my family for a week. $26, I bought a Hot Wheels carrying case.
No, just when you were thinking about the coffee cup that Russ Tamblyn gave you.
I still have it.
Yeah.
I wonder if your parents do this too. They eat everything just like piles of butter and all that and just so bad for you. But their coffee, they drink... Folgers. They drink fucking Folgers, and it's literally like you waved water near the can.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not even. Yeah, it's like awful. Barely brown.
And also, my mother. Yeah. Also, my mother will put the grossest. Any day now, she's just gonna start putting conditioner in the coffee. It's like any like hazelnut, vanilla. You know, the blood of a diabetic, like anything they can put into the coffee.
I would buy coffee when I go home and I have to make my own and they freak out because they can't drink it.
I just go to the Double D and get two big ones and bring them home, and that's what I drink.
What is it? Oh, what's the big one? It's is it the Great One or something like that it's called?
Yeah.
And it's like what? Like my mom, I just in the drive-thru, she's like, yeah, can I get a hot Great One extra extra? I'm like, oh my God, why? And
it drives me nuts that I can't just doctor it myself.
I know.
Can I do it, please?
Please, God.
Yeah.
Like, just let me. I remember like being in high school and stuff, and it's like you'd get an iced coffee from Dunkin' Donuts, and if there wasn't an inch of sugar sitting on the bottom. Then like you couldn't drink it.
Yeah,
like,
mixed in with the ice.
Oh my God.
I would have to go get iced coffees for, when I worked, I was an usher at the Milford Cinema in high school, and I would have to go get an iced coffee for Mr. Dedarian.
Oh my God. I remember one of the first times I came home and I went to Dunkin' Donuts and I tried to order with soy milk, and the woman just laughed at me. Just straight up like cackled.
I used to drive a Volvo, and my dad goes, yuppie car. Yuppie car.
Yuppie car.
My dad has a truck with an NRA sticker on the back.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's just the whole deal. I mean, I know we have similar genealogy. I look like my dad.
Like, I don't know. Even look like my parents. I've begun to question.
Well, my nickname was the mail. I'm so different from everyone in my family. Yeah. But my nickname was the mailman's kid.
That's so funny and sad.
Yeah.
I have similarities of things of my parents. Like me and my dad, this is going to sound so weird, but we have the same feet. Like mine are much smaller, but they look like the same. I'm like, you know, but they're very much the same. Well, then my dad, his like blood sugar or something went crazy and
they had to stop
eating any candy. He was eating those big like couple pound bag of M&Ms, polish off one of those at night.
Ooh.
Like he would go crazy.
Is he obese?
He's not. He would just eat
a ton of
sugar.
He's 6'4", he's a big guy.
He's a big dude. Yeah. And like, I just remember when everyone was losing their minds because he had to, like, the doctor was like, how are you not dead? And I just remember going to the grocery store with my dad. I had to go and supervise him to make sure that he wasn't going to buy anything. And it was straight up like going with an addict. My dad literally just walked over and he picks up a bag of circus peanuts. And he's like, I just need to know how the bag feels in my hand. And I was like,
the grossest thing ever.
Like,
nothing
why?
About that exists in nature.
Oh my God.
It's like, foam rubber and an unnatural color.
So funny. And then my mom's like, yeah, you know, I've cut way back. She goes, I got way back on everything. You know, I drink Mick Ultra now. I drink Mick. I'm like, that's still beer.
Mick Ultra.
That's all she drinks. When she came out here, she goes, do they have Mick Ultra here? No, mom. No one carries that because it's awful. No one wants it.
Or you don't go here. I gotta let you go because you're going to be late. A nice wine cooler.
Oh, gross.
Oh, the timeless combination of wine and ice cubes.
I like just a match made in heaven. Oh my God.
This is the thing that Phil Hendry would do towards the end when he was on 790 KABC.
Yeah.
He would do the show.
Yeah.
And then he would say, now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm reminding you, I am playing Margaret Ray. There is no guest here. It's all me. And then people would call up furious to talk to Margaret Ray just to prove the point that people don't listen.
Like, oh, people don't listen.
I can tell you, I'm just saying, this is fake.
Why'd they take him off the air?
His numbers or whatever. But it was like, this is fake. I'm Margaret Ray.
And
there's no guest here. Yeah. Can I talk to Margaret, please?
Well, the classic is War of the Worlds, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I wonder, I guess you couldn't, it would be fun, wouldn't it, to do, can you do another War of the Worlds?
They actually put laws into effect after that.
Okay. Yeah.
And that is another, like, it's a weird thing. Like, people really do have their own reality, your own little your own news source. Like, my parents think that Trump's doing awesome.
The what?
And
Trump, they do, you know,
my
see
parents,
this?
My parents.
That's what's scary,
well,
by
here's
the way.
Thing. My parents watch Fox, and they think that Trump is the greatest president we've ever had.
Are you serious?
By and large, I listen to MSNBC, and I think he's days away from jail. And both are full of shit. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And they're both full of shit. And that's fine. You can be into Star Wars, or you can be into Game of Thrones. Whatever fake reality you like to live in is fine. Just acknowledge that it's a fake reality and then you'll be fine.
Do you think it's partly too that we, like, people have, you know, the whole theory is that everybody is in their own bubble because we've become more and more atomized. Like, there's not a lot of community stuff.
Right.
Like, people aren't getting, because when you're fucking with people in big groups and you interact with a bunch of people, you realize, and I've had this experience, like, oh, well holy shit, I'm thinking totally wrong about this. Like, that's the great thing about having contact with other human beings is you realize, whoa, I am completely off on this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When you're super wrong.
Yeah. And it's tough. It's tough to, like, kind of have that realization and kind of swallow.
Do you know who Rick Reynolds is?
Yeah.
A comedian.
He disappeared.
Yeah, he disappeared.
I think it was during an Emoji movie.
I think I know where he is.
Did
you shake a rib loose there?
Something happened.
I literally do think I know where he is, but he had the greatest joke of many, tons of brilliant ones. But
yeah, huh?
One of them was that when you're arguing with your wife and you realize you're wrong, but you have to keep going because you have dickhead momentum.
Yes!
So much of our culture, like the whole thing with climate change now, they just have a lot of dickhead momentum. and they can't back off. You're underwater. Your house is gone. Well, we don't know that. Jury's still out.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Well, people always say, it snows. There's no global warming. That's like saying, I'm out of milk. There's no such thing as cows.
Tell the hippies from Greenpeace, you know, it's minus -3. Tell the hippies from Greenpeace, where's the global warming today?
Yeah. It's happening. But yeah, no, it'll be, it's a very interesting time. I mean, I have kids, so I'm very invested in having a decent place for them to live when I'm cold cuts.
Yeah.
But,
well, I think what, when I'm cold cuts, well, I think the way people will live, and this is a throwback to the 1920s, is, people are going to have to learn how to flagpole sit.
I agree.
And that'll come back.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Just sit at the top of very
low. Yeah. I'm telling you, we laughed when Waterworld came out. But it is super. You know the thing that killed Waterworld?
Kevin Costner's woodenness.
Kevin Costner and
I never realized what a bad actor he was until recently. By the way.
Yeah,
Do you agree with that?
He can be flat. He can be very
flat. Field of Dreams was actually a good movie, and his flatness actually kind of worked in that movie because he was just a guy from the Midwest who was like, "Aw shucks."
Yeah, no, he's great in his
little niche.
In his niche, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. You just have to know your niche, and you also have to know a good. You know, you have to be lucky, and you have to make movies that aren't boring.
Yeah, I guess my favorite was Bull Durham of his. Yeah, no,
The Untouchables. He's fantastic.
Oh, Untouchables. He was good.
He's been a lot of great.
What am
movies.
I saying? Yeah.
But he's just like when he's bad.
He was a big
bad.
Star. Yeah,
when he was bad. Huge.
Yeah, I forgot
he
about that.
Was,
yes.
Dances with Wolves kind of ruined him because he wrote it and directed it and starred in it, and it was 5 hours long, and he won the Oscar, and then he thought, this is what I do, and then every movie made was like 3 hours long. The Postman. Yeah.
The Postman and Waterworld sunk him.
Yeah, and Waterworld.
No pun intended on that.
But the weird thing about Waterworld was he had the people there, he had gills. Like, the people evolved and developed gills, but it just looked like he had labia on his neck. Like, it was really awful. It was just like, oh, Jesus. And that was before computer. Like, they couldn't paint him out.
Yeah.
So it was like, what the fuck is that on his neck? It looks like a vagina. That's his gills.
I forgot about that.
Well, he has a vagina on his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. Oddly, just the way things are going, next month we could be, so how do we survive this horrible desert that we all live in? Who would have thought that the oceans would have turned to sand overnight?
Really?
Because of the reversal of the polarity.
The reversal of the polarity.
It all could happen.
The reversal of the polarity, which can be done with your psychiatrist. The reversal of polarity.
All I know is I am really trying hard to get into Halloween frame of mind.
Halloween's your favorite. That is an issue.
Starting slow. Maybe I'll be haunted by the ghosts of many animals.
Oh, God. I'm sorry about that. That's tough. But it is amazing, though, that we live in this. I mean, really, we live in this intense time with a lunatic at the helm, surrounded, and he surrounded himself with other lunatics, with climate change and all this. Yet we still have to find a way to enjoy our lives.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We do. Yep. And you have kids, so you definitely, you know what I mean? And it's like, you can't give, it's an amazing kind of testament to human strength. Like, you can't give into it. You can't give into the.
No. No, you can't. You have to keep going. That's the great thing about having children, is they pull you out of your ass and nail your feet to the ground if you're an adult.
Right.
I know you have to go, but when you come back, will you please sing Bigger Than a Fist? Which I think is the greatest thing you've ever done.
Oh, I forgot that. I never
it's fantastic.
Did it again about having protein.
Yeah.
Don't have protein bigger than your fist.
Portions. No portion should be bigger than your fist.
No portion should be bigger than a fist.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. So then you end up on the X-Files.
So he sends me the script, and it's all, I don't know if you, this is so like,
curly
like
paper, is it?
Well, it's all rolled up.
Yeah, you can't,
like, it's good for one sheet of paper, but to have like a script is almost impossible. So I read the whole thing and it says Fetterman, then he goes, what do you think? I'm like, it's fine. It's great. It's fine. I think this is funny. He goes, obviously I'm going to change the name, but I just wanted your rhythm in my head. And I was like, you know, you can change the name if you want, but I'm fine with keeping it at Wayne Fetterman, even though it's a not Wayne Fetterman, it's a producer named Wayne Fetterman, just because it's
it was so meta anyway. It was
they were making fun
of the show, and I thought it would work. He's like, you're fine with that? I was like, yeah. And then I had to audition.
Of course.
Yeah, for Chris, what was his name?
Chris Carter.
Yeah, Chris Carter. Yeah. Yeah, I had an audition.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, if I don't get this.
Yeah, I've done that.
You have?
I went in and tested against no one. And I got the show.
Right.
But I did. I tested against no one. It was like, if you don't get this, they would rather have no one do it than you.
Oh, my God. No, I was literally worried they were like going to bring in, like, I don't know, Fred Stoller.
With me, it was always Billy Ragsdale. I'd walk in and see Billy Ragsdale and go, fuck
God this. Damn it. This guy closes. But no, that was a great thing. But here's the thing, Dana. When I did the X-Files...
It was shot down here then?
Shot down here. It's the first year I think it was shot down here. 20 people came up to me and was like, well, you know, you're going to be selling memorabilia at these shows for the rest of your life. You're set.
Yeah.
Not true.
Would you want to do that?
I don't know. Yes.
No.
Yes. On some level, I would I think it would be fun to meet fans.
Yeah.
I'm into meeting fans.
Yeah.
Went to one.
That's why I'm on Grindr.
Exactly. Went to one at the Beverly Garland.
Yeah, Beverly Garland. Yeah, sure.
Debacle.
Really? Sitting there?
You know who I sat next to?
Who
couldn't stop signing?
Who?
Eddie Deason. Do you know who that is?
From 1941?
Yes, but he's from
I Want to Hold Your Hand.
He's also in War Games, and he's also in Grease, and he's in a lot of what's the animated movie with Tom Hanks? It was like half.
Toy Story?
No, like half.
Polar Express?
Yes, yeah, he's in that. Yeah. So, and line, Eddie Deason, me just standing.
I would have never guessed that.
Huge. It was so humiliating. Can you imagine sitting there with like pictures like.
I took Mila to one of those, and they literally sat her next to Gary Busey, or as my friend calls him, Gary Drug Abusey.
Nice.
And it was like, she put him in his place real quick, but he's literally insane.
Well, have you done that?
I've not done that, no.
Will you now? That I feel like with this show?
I have nothing to do for it. I don't think anybody would, I guess Simpson stuff, but I've never been asked.
Not for Stan?
It's too early for that.
We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
I know you're making fun of it, but you really wouldn't do that.
I feel weird. I would feel weird about it. It just seems.
You've seen the Carrie Fisher movie where she was like signing things and having a great time with her fans.
I know, and I know it paid Adam West's bills for 20 years.
Right.
You know,
but I was just. I love that people were so sure from one X-Files. Yeah. I'm like, no. Thanks for raising my expectations and then having a humiliating.
Hey, Wayne, here's a reason to get your hopes up. So tell me before we go, I want to know, tell me about the Gary Shandling documentary. What's it called? What's the through line? How's it going?
It's untitled at this point. It's long. It might even be two parts. It's going to be on HBO.
The Blue Album and the Red Album.
Right, exactly. And there's, and Judd is his project. He's basically doing it with your buddies at Radical.
Radical, yeah.
And
they're also doing Letterman's new show.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So good. I've seen it. It's
how long is it now?
It's as deep a dive into the mind of a comedian as you can, because he kept diaries the whole time. So we have the access to the diaries.
Does somebody read them? Or
the judge is trying to figure out exactly how he's going to either put it up or So
don't have a guy who sounds like Gary.
No.
Yeah,
but the arc of his life is pretty powerful, and it's.
He was a very self-actualized person.
Tell me what you mean by that.
That he really seemed, although his comedy came from his neurosis, he really did seem, especially towards the end of his life, to know exactly who he was.
Right.
And accepted the good and the bad in terms of his neurotic behavior. And the story that I think about Gary, and tell me if this comes up or if I'm just misinformed.
Right.
Was when it came time for the Larry Sanders box set.
Yes.
He spent an inordinate amount of time on the DVD extras.
No, I was very involved with all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question.
And it was just like,
almost.
What are you doing?
Well, it was.
No, that's what I mean. It's like you want to say to him, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, that was Gary. Like, I felt like he really wanted to explore that on a, I hate to use the word cellular, but like on just like on a, like a whole nother level of like what happened on that set. I don't know if you know this. He had a girlfriend on the show that he lived with. She was on the show. I'm blanking on her name right now. So, and they ended up breaking up and he fired her off the show. She, of course, like, you can't do that.
Yeah. Frowned upon?
You can't do that.
Yeah.
But nothing to do with what I'm doing at work. Yeah. You can't do that. So she ended up suing him. So it was
like, don't blame her.
Don't blame her at all. Yeah. So there, I don't know why I brought that up, but it was just like his whole arc of his life is just very, I don't know. He wanted to. So he interviews, oh, I know why. So he interviews her for the DVD set. This is after they've broken up. He's fired her. She sued him. She's married with the, and has a kid and wants to still is like, okay, what really was happening? What, like, so that is what those DVD and the end. The reason that Jerry Seinfeld does Comedians in Cars with Coffee is because he did one of those DVD extras. It almost took him like 2 years to put that together.
And that inspired Jerry to do Comedians in Cars with Coffee?
Yeah, because of, you'll see it. It's in the documentary because they just hang out. And it's in a very, like, even more casual. I mean, obviously, there's cameras. They're mic'd. You know, it's there's some artifice to the whole thing.
Right.
But in that, in the way we're doing, like, podcasting now, like, yeah, that inspired him. Like, oh, this is an interesting way as opposed to presentational. We're going to do a show. You know, even even as deep as they went on the Larry Sanders Show, it's still, we're doing a show.
Right.
So his action was like, I want to try to strip that all away. It's really
fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know it sounds a little obsessive and maybe self-absorbed.
Have you ever heard my podcast? Speaking of obsessive and self-absorbed.
Yeah, I'd be now, really curious to see what you think of it.
I really want to see it. And here's the, I want to close on this.
Let's close. We're out of time.
We're out of time. Calvin Trillin is coming back. Calvin Trillin will be back.
Tomorrow night, Dolly Parton.
Peaches and Herb and Rod Hall and Emu will be here. God, I miss Johnny. So, and I see phrases that I'm sorry Johnny's not alive to put into jokes.
Of course.
You know, may a crazed software designer mute your Instagram.
Right. Of course.
Something, 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 relief map of Hindu Kush.
So beautiful, that guy. Apparently.
We need to be able to mute people on Instagram. Just some people. Right. You just got to mute.
And that's your goodbye?
That's my goodbye. No. When Gary was interviewing the woman that he fired and broke up with and fired, she's now married with a kid.
Yeah.
Would he make the logical leap that, look, because of what happened, you have this beautiful child and this beautiful relationship. So it's not all bad. A win comes out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think she still wishes they had a kid together.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. So it's, he goes there. I hate to use that term, but he does examine that.
Does he say that? Because that's, I really want
to
see that.
She says that. She says that. She says that there was,
her husband must love watching that interview.
That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. So interesting you said that.
I really would rather have one with you. What? What did you just say, sweetheart?
Hold on.
Can we? Hang on a minute. Hang on, Gary. Could you? What the fuck did you just? What the fuck did you? Yeah, that's a rough one.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
now you don't. What do you say?
You know, he was into Zen. You know, he's a Buddhist. And chant? Do you do any of that? I know we're wrapping up, but do you chant?
I don't chant. I do meditate.
You do TM?
Yeah.
How many times a day?
Oh, on a good day, twice.
It's not working.
No.
Well, I do it. That's me doing it.
I do it at the day I was with the David Lynch Institute. It was like,
you do?
Follow the lead of this chain smoking lunatic. He knows the truth.
No, because Seinfeld is also.
Yes.
That.
I don't know if we had the same instructor or not. But
oh.
For him to be a Zen Buddhist, when he hears that, how does Zen apply to his response?
To paraphrase Sarah Silverman, I think he was drawn to Zen Buddhism because he wasn't Zen.
Right.
So it was like he was just trying to get there, get that peace of mind.
Right.
So it was, that's really the story of Gary Chandler, is the struggle between those two things. this crazy childhood, this brother, this insane mom, and yeah.
That'll do it.
Yeah, and then just whatever show business does to you.
Yeah.
But he was a smart, he was a really smart guy. He was an engineering major.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, I think I can outwork these other comedians.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to work.
Yeah.
Like, when he switched majors to, like, creative writing, he was like, oh, no one's really working here compared to what I had to do in engineering school. So he was like, oh. And you know he's a successful writer.
Oh, yeah. Sanford and Son.
Yeah. Sure, easy. Yeah. Came easy.
Yeah.
Came easy to him.
Yeah. Well, if you know how to do that. It's not the hardest term in the
world. Okay, all right.
So, Wayne, if people are in Los Angeles, they should go to the Melrose Improv and see you.
Mm-hmm.
If they're fans of Pistol Pete Maravich, we didn't even touch.
No, there's so much. There's a lot. There's a lot in Fetterman, right?
This has to be continued.
No.
But tell us about the book.
I'm saying no.
No. You're not going to give us the name of the book?
Of course.
You're not going to sell your own book?
No, yes. Yeah, I wrote a book called Maravich about this basketball player who was very, it's just a Shakespearean story.
Yeah.
Just about a guy who dedicates his life to being this great basketball player, and it makes him very unhappy.
It's really the bookend with Fear Strikes Out, I think. It's
Remember that? Yeah.
Coin flip.
Jesus, it's so hard. So hard when you have to perform on that level. But
it used to be, I believe it was the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago, their baseball, their softball team was whenever you scored a run after you touched home, you'd have to scream, "Is that good enough for you, Pop?"
I know. It all goes back to that.
Jimmy Pearsall.
Yeah.
Played by Boston. Anthony Perkins in the movie.
Yeah. Did he play for the Red Sox?
I believe he did, yes.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a impossible to please father living in Massachusetts. All right, Wayne, thanks for coming down.
All right, Dana, thanks for having me.
Wayne Fetterman, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going.
He's here all week.
On the podcast, reach for the sky, Dana Gould-Bauer.
We barely try.
The Dana Gould-Bauer. Never an hour.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano. Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
I'm a person, I'm a singer.